This is HPR episode 2525 entitled HPR 2017 New Year's Eve Show Part 3. It is hosted by various hosts and is about 182 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is Part 3 of the 6th Annual HPR New Year Show.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
And speaking of enslaving humanity, I don't know if anybody's seen, was it War for the Planet of the Apes? We watched it yesterday. It was nearly unwatchable.
Aliens concur.
It got 93 from Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, did I read the scale wrong? Does that mean 93% of the people hated it?
Sounds like they've been infiltrated.
Were any of those Planet of the Apes remakes any good?
Yeah, the first two I thought were good. This War for the Planet of the Apes was awful.
Once they have to come up with more derivatives, and there, it was like War for the Planet
like
of the
Highlander?
Apes, of the possibility of the people of the planets, and now the galaxies, and I was like, wait, come on, it's getting a bit long in the tooth.
I think Rotten Tomatoes is a bunch of shills anyway.
What the heck? There was a 2001 Planet of the Apes?
Yeah, I think that's where they started with the remakes.
I thought they started with the guy in the zoo and his father. What was the guy's? The actor. He was on Third Rock.
No idea.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And I can see his face, can't remember his name.
You would think with all these internets, we would be able to come up with this information on the quick, on the fly.
I'm drilling down on something else.
Was it John Lithgow or?
Yeah.
So Harry and the Hendersons.
Right.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
So 2014, there's Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
John Lithgow's best role was in Third Rock.
I thought he did a good job in the Dexter series as an evil one.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was good too.
Yeah, he was the ultimate challenge, the ultimate hunt for the Dexter.
So Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes were good.
Go on.
I have no idea. I'm just looking at this Planet of the Apes of 2001. It looks like the 1960s remake because Air Force astronaut crash lands on mysterious planet evolved, blah, blah, blah. So that looks like, you know, just a rehash of the 1960s one. And I don't know if that fits in the same timeline. But, yeah, Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes were good. And I have no idea who this is. Director Rupert Wyatt, and I thought it was a good movie.
Thanks to director Rupert Wyatt out there on your blue marble.
And Dawn of the Planet of the Apes 2014 was Matt Reeves, the director.
As long as it wasn't Bryan Singer, I think we're safe.
Okay, so I didn't realize one of the main characters in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was the same guy from Terminator Genesis, John Connor.
Oh, Kay Wisher says that he has a good part. I'm assuming we were talking about John Lithgow, that he has a good part on The Crown on Netflix.
Was he play Churchill or something?
Plays Churchill, exactly.
Yeah. Sorry, what time frame, though, is that
typecasted? Jeez.
Fitting. 5150 in the house.
We can't hear you, buddy.
Turn his headphones up. I can't hear the music. Turn. Somebody turn 5150's headphones up. Come on. First time caller, long time listener. Just reading what Kay Wisher is texting. And if you're just joining us, you're Hacker Public Radio. Thanks to Josh from An Honest Host for making it all possible. Thanks to Ken Fallon, who is leaving us unattended, leaving the aliens to bounce around in this bouncy castle.
Or right, is IMDb more and more useless?
Yes.
Yeah, I've noticed that. It's kind of gotten worse over the years.
In other words, I have to pay for IMDb to find out, you know, Jason Clark, what movies he's been in.
It's worse than that, Flying Rich. They got rid of all the comments.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder why.
They're shills, just like Rotten Tomatoes.
Bada bing, bada boom. I think you got it.
Well, their sole purpose is just to sell movies, and they're just an extension of the movie generation business, so of course they're going to do that.
Here's the thing. How much does it cost you to go to the movies? Because forget about, you know, transportation costs, just immediately what you pay once you enter the box office. So you got the cost. It might be $15-$18 to see a movie. If you get a soda and popcorn, that could be another $15 or $20, and that's just for one person. Now, if you take a family of three or four, or, you know, like Dan Washko, I don't know how many, you know, of his kids he's taken to the movies when he goes or buys a babysitter. And I mean, it's got to be over $100 to go to the movies. So if you're going to be forking over that kind of money, if they gave me some sort of guarantee, money back guarantee, then I would go. I wouldn't want the guarantee on the popcorn, but I'd want at least this movie sucked, come back and see a free movie on us. I would take more chances at the movies then. But after, I would be completely angry if I took my wife and daughter out to see the third Planet of the Apes movie that we just couldn't, we're like, it's moving crazy slow. When is this going to take off? Boy, this did nothing. And if I spend, you know, $60 for all of us to go to movies, have popcorn, I would be incredibly mad.
That's the lowest year this year for seats in the theaters for 22 years. So I think everyone's figured it out.
Well, and I can. Well, I read Ben Shapiro's review of The Force Awakens, and I'm like, crap, I'm not going to see that movie.
Yeah.
I'll, you know, if it comes out on, you know, if I could pay $2 at Redbox or, you know, watch it on Amazon for $2.99 or if it comes for free on Netflix, I'll watch it. But I'm not going to the theater for that.
Yeah, there was I posted a link here. I was aware of a movie pass type of thing that mm-hmm. people were getting hip to. And they were like, oh, all right, I'm finally getting back out to the movies. All right, this is good. And then I believe that they canceled it, if I'm not mistaken.
Because yeah. I heard the guy on, he was on Glenn Beck's show, and they're talking about that, because apparently Glenn Beck likes to go to the movies a lot.
I'm trying to do a little bit of research here, but I did hear that they shut that thing down because it was probably too successful and was probably not giving the media industrial complex their proper cash stream that they wanted.
Well, the thing that's very frustrating is you can legally go to Hong Kong, and this is more true, you know, 10, 15 years ago, back when people were buying movies on disc as opposed to streaming them. You could go to Hong Kong and buy any movie you wanted for $1. But here it's, you know, always $20+, and they say it's the packaging. I'm like, you're telling me because I don't get a white box? I'm like, send me the disc in a plastic sleeve. You know, I mean, like a garbage Ziploc bag sleeve. I'm okay with that. I don't need the pretty box. And if they had an option like that in the United States, and I think there's a lot of things about the United States, we expect things to be packaged a certain way. And I think they believe they can sell to us for a premium. It's basically what the market bears. For instance, I had a buddy that had a vet clinic that was doing real good, and some company made an offer to buy him out, and he sold the vet clinic, and he was still part of the contract was for, I don't know, a year or two, he still had to work there a couple days a week. And somebody came in to get their cat, I don't know, spayed, neutered, and, you know, the week before it was $20, and now it's like $120. And he's like, hold on, let me look this up. And he goes into the computer, and then he finds out, he talks to the company that bought him, and they're like, oh, yeah, well, we did a study, figured out what the market could bear, and that's the price for this neighborhood. And I think a lot of that happens in the United States, like our price of drugs. I was in Costa Rica, and they would actually sell you by the pill. So I was looking for, what do you take for seasickness? What's it called? Dramamine. Dramamine in the United States, for a box of, I don't know how many pills, you know, whatever the box is like $20 or $30. There, it's like $2. It was dramatically different for the whole box.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know what was wrong. Fiddled with a bunch of settings. Yeah, well, Rich, that also works for agricultural chemicals. And I can see, yeah, Monsanto does a lot, puts a lot of money into research. And, you know, to make a profit, they need to get that money back. But, you know, secondary world market stuff like that, Mexico, even to a certain extent Australia, they say, these guys can't pay the purchase the research price. So they charge them on the production price. You know, in other words, gotcha. They take the research out of it. They say, you know, a ton of this chemical costs this much to produce. Then we will, you know, we will add a profit onto that, and the, you know, all of the research costs gets charged to Americans. And that's, you know, that's the same way in the pill industry.
That's a bullshit argument, though. Well, can I say that?
And again, that's wealth redistribution, because basically we, the United States, are financing all of the research and development of these new products, and the rest of the world gets them for the production costs, where we're paying the, you know, full market value of it.
It's rent-seeking on the corporation's behalf. I mean, I'm a capitalist like anybody else, but what they're doing is they're taking a fixed cost of doing business and trying to use that as an excuse for raising up prices on a certain area.
Well, there have been some outrageous crimes as far as I'm concerned. What was it? What do you take when you have anaphylactic shock and they raised the rate of that?
Epinephrine.
Like, epinephrine, they raised it, the EpiPen, that's it, to, you know, like 200% or 200 times, I should say.
Part of the problem is patenting. Like, the epinephrine's not a patentable drug at this point, but the delivery method is, right, is patentable, and there's so much regulation involved with that, especially after the taxes involved with Obamacare on medical devices, that I'm sure that had something to do with it.
And that was, why would they go for, if you want to make healthcare available to the people, and if it was a truly genuine effort, why would you have a tax on medical devices? Because that's one of the things that delivers healthcare to people.
They need to make the cut.
Maybe somebody just has a better lobbying firm. You know, that's about it.
Aliens believe that to be true. Who has the most lobbyists? Who is actually pulling the string, so to speak? We're looking down and we see that it's all lobbyists, CFR. The politicians are doing you no good. We don't understand why that they're still there and you know, giving you double speak, all that crap.
Well, and oh, not to derail this, another place this might go is military acquisitions. And I'm actually on the other side of that on this one. My dad was an officer in the Air Force Reserve. He saw how some of this worked. But, you know, first off, in these last few decades, you know, you get somebody like Lockheed to research the development of the F-22, expecting to sell 1,000, 1,500 of the things. And, you know, come back, you know, delays by Congress. 20 years later, when it's almost obsolete, they say, yeah, that's great work. We'll take 50 of them. And that's why, you know, an aircraft is $100 million instead of $35 million,
but
like
the F-35 was to solve that, because the F-35 was going to be so much cheaper than the F-22.
And see that again.
How did that work out?
Introduced problems.
Like the Saturn V and the space shuttle.
You're making the Air Force and the Navy take the same version of the same aircraft. We've had that before. The F-17 would have been the Air Force version of the F-18. The difference being it was not designed to slam itself repeatedly down on a carrier, so it didn't have to be built like a dang truck. I mean, that's why an F-14 and F-15 look the same, but an F-14 is just fast. It's not maneuverable. An F-15 would blow it out of the sky. Because it's the F-14 has to be built heavy like a truck to land on a carrier. So so if the F-35 project, you're crippling the land-based forces.
Oh yeah.
Just so you can say, hey, we have the same parts inventory for both versions.
Right.
I think the military stuff is a fact. It's a monopsony, meaning that there's multiple inputs for a single customer. And I know there's more than one branch of military in the U.S., but it's essentially the same thing. It's a government customer.
Well, now the problem, first off, there's multiple different problems. And I remember when the F-18 was going through Congress and how Congress was designing the F-18. I'm like, you guys are out of your freaking mind. You need to let the brightest and the best people deal with these situations and walk away from it. And you can't legislate top performing aircraft. And, just the same way, I have a sports car and a truck, and my wife has a four-door sedan. Each fill a different role. So if you want to take off vertically, or you want to land on an aircraft carrier, or you're land-based, those are substantially different aircraft. You can't, if you're going to put everything in the same frame, you're horrifically wasting things. And unfortunately, aircraft, just like a bird, a bird's digestive system has to be so simple, so fast, that it just gets rid of the stuff as quick as possible. Its bones have to be hollow. Everything about the bird is designed to be lightweight, because it's all critically important that it flies. Same thing with an airplane. You can't just say, well, we're going to make this airplane, the best air superiority fighter, take off vertically and land on a carrier. And it's like, no, those three don't intersect.
Right. And it also explains, your $10,000 toilets and your $1,000 hammer and stuff like that. Now, sometimes, because it's not, you're not Ace Hardware and you're not selling $100,000 of that hammer a year. It's, especially, something is specially made, but part of it is it's also amortizing the cost of the of the entire aircraft. You're hiding bits and pieces of it to make the aircraft look cheaper.
So you're saying I can give you an airplane for $10 if you buy the $50,000 hammer?
Something like that, yes. Well, just like I can sell you a printer for $15 if you'll pay me $15 for ink cartridges, or $50 for ink cartridges.
Yeah, Joel announced, they got a new printer, and I look it up, and I'm like, yeah, the ink is just as much as the printer.
On that note, I just bought a new to me HP Color Laser Jet for $25.
Dude, where'd you get that score? That's amazing.
At our local Goodwill.
Oh my gosh.
It still has all four toners. I think the lowest one is red, and it's got an estimated life of another 800 pages before I have to replace it.
Darn. And those toner cartridges, you probably can refill.
No, but four of them, a complete reset, will be only $69 on Amazon for it.
Wow. So I have, I bought for $50, I don't know how many years ago, probably more than 10, HP LaserJet 5. I have only replaced the cartridge like earlier this year. Now, not one, I virtually never print. Two, I think the cartridge is only $10 or $15. It's super cheap. And I'm just shocked at, there are inkjets that have refillable things now. I haven't really looked into that because I just hate inkjet with a passion. It just, really salted the earth for me. So I just don't want to go there.
Well, Ken Fallon, he did a thing on a real interesting kit he bought. Oh, it was on an HPR probably 4 years ago. But he has, like, he's got his converted to these big, huge external tanks, you know, full of toner. I mean, like, you know, a quart or 2 quarts or something like that per tank sitting there next to the printer. That never run, you know, or you just pour more in when they run out. So, and he really liked that setup.
I think that's called bulk inkjet. The problem with this printer was that I've got it hooked up to my Windows 10 machine. I know. And I want to be able to print to everything else on the network. And evidently the drivers for it, because it was originally a consumer level product from HP, they don't have the ability to share the printer, which is lame. So
get a Raspberry Pi.
I got a Raspberry Pi 3, and I'm happily serving it up.
Nice.
As well as Pi Hole, and Pi Hole was beautiful.
I don't know. I didn't, as much as I like Pi Hole, I don't find it too useful because there's so many sites that don't want you to block them.
They don't know.
Yeah, I always get it. You mean the new Pi Hole? Because I was even getting it with the Pi Hole. It's like, you have an ad blocker.
No, I've not gotten that at all yet. I used to get it. I used to have ad micro blocker or whatever it was. UBlock Origin. And I'd get that warning, you know, on the WAPO and the rest of that. But I'm not getting any of that.
Huh.
What's a good site? Let me test it real quick. Does CNN throw that error up?
You know, a lot of news sites throw that error. It's funny. I got it today. I ignore this crap so much it's ridiculous. But if you go to Drudge Report and click through a couple of the top headlines, you'd probably hit it.
Yeah, and I guess we just went through a time zone here. So greetings to Pakistan, Tashkent, Islamabad. That's a city. So why are we... That's not a country. Lahore, well, and Karachi, that's also
I know
a
her.
City.
Yeah,
Happy New Year.
And you said it wrong. It's Pakistan.
I don't want to start a war right now, Rich. Thank you.
We do not want war. We want peace. We want a ministry of peace.
Now, the one thing I could do without in my HP inkjet, I don't print that much. I mean... tanks 800 copies that would probably, or 800 pages, that would probably get me through my life, I could do without the sensor that knows when I have to print something out and when, you know, and I have to be there right now with it, like I'm on my way to Walmart to pick up something on the pickup desk, or on my way to the airport and I want to print out my flight information.
I'm Flying Rich, I'm looking on, I guess, Drudge Report just to find news sites, and I'm clicking at random stuff, and so far I haven't seen anything giving me a warning saying I'm blocking stuff. I'm on New York Times right now, and I got nothing.
All right, let me do the same.
Aliens are checking their journals, and we're clicking stuff. You can't see it. It's so obscured from here. It's slanted, enchanted.
And you guys were talking about IMDb earlier. I haven't noticed any kind of blockage. Seems the same to me as it always has.
No, it's not blocking. There's no no content there. It's all pro movie, and the comments section's just gone.
Okay, so I clicked on the Washington Times. Now, I have an ad blocker in the browser, so it's definitely detecting that. It says, looks like you're running an ad blocker.
We don't take kindly to ad blockers on our ad platform.
I'm on the Washington Times right now, and I've got the pile engaged. I've got no warnings at all.
Okay, can you click on that link that I just dropped in the Mumble chat and tell me if that works for you?
Yep, I got Hollywood tries to save Earth, the moviegoers aren't buying Echo messages anymore.
And I'm wondering if it's that maybe I was mistaken that my Pi Hole wasn't working, and it might have been that my browser blocking was on, and that was giving me the issue.
Yeah, I've got no warnings at all. No ads, and no nothing saying that they, you know, I'm blocking their ads, which is great.
Guess who's firing up a Pi Hole in a few minutes?
Yeah, they're great. I'm going to step away for a minute, guys, but I'll be back.
10-4.
Yeah, I get the New York or the Washington Times pop up as an advertisement, but nothing yet that tells me I've got an ad blocker on, which I do.
So here's
we
there it is.
Yep, there you go. Give it time.
Yeah, sometimes you have to scroll down the page, and that's what I'm doing. I'm clicking on the tab and scrolling down.
We'd like to show you notifications for the latest news and updates. No thanks.
Oh, the most annoying one is we'd like to pop something up completely unrelated in where you were just going to click.
Here's the whole thing. Whatever news organization it may be, if I go to their site, I'm getting their services essentially free. If they make money on ad revenue, God bless them. I respect that, and they should. If you hork up the page so bad that I can't tell what's ad content or article, I know they're going on the conversion rate, like click-throughs and all that bit, but you make it so disgustingly obnoxious to me, then I go to a pie hole and ad blocker extent to get rid of this crap. I fully respect these people's, ads. Just don't hork up the page so hard that I can't read an article. And I hate to say it, a buddy of mine sends me a lot of links from Alan West and a couple other sites, and they're like the worst.
Washington Times coming in with some really horking up the page, making us go through pie holes and wormholes to access content. Travesty.
Hey, Fitty, you got a Pine Book, right?
Yes, I do.
What OS are you running on it?
I think Debian of some sort.
How's that it's working for you?
I haven't had any trouble with it. I did not like, well, the one that came with it I didn't get because I switched, it came with the bigger EEMC, and that, of course, had the Android on it by default, which I didn't, I didn't want an Android computer. Sorry, mentioned this tip before. The ones they show on the site just for the Pinebook, at least 6 months ago when I got it, were very, very, there wasn't much selection. Sorry, the reason I didn't get on earlier, I have picked up a nasty cough that has been interfering with my sleep and stuff, so I just couldn't get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to start. But
oh, sorry about that, buddy.
The one they had on there, I think it was sort of a stripped-down Ubuntu. I tried it, did not like it much, and then I can't remember what the other one was, but the two that they show on there, or did 6 months ago, they probably got them all on there. Just for the Pinebook Linux versions, I didn't really like either one. Then I found out it's a it seems to be 100% electronically compatible with the Pine 64, which has a plethora of distros available. So you just go to the Pine 64 page and pick an image.
Okay, I'm heading there now. Hey, I had no idea, because as much as, even with the crappy trackpad, if it worked decent, and again, my only uses of it were to maybe send, receive email, Netflix, YouTube, and Amazon, and Plex as my four video sources, if that's all I need a device to do.
The Pinebook, I forgot about that. But yeah, that looks interesting. Plus, something on probably you too. Whatever we're going about that on here before as well. But yeah, for basic laptop, that could be quite good, I guess.
Well, I mainly keep it, as my travel computer, because if they lose the bag, I don't care that much, I guess, as opposed to my. My Chromebook would probably make a better travel computer. It's definitely tougher with the aluminum case and faster because it's Intel. But I'd hate to lose it. Even though I got it in a raffle, it's still $400 to replace the thing. Where of course you could make that same argument, 5-year-old laptop off eBay or something. In fact, I've bought a laptop that's an iSeries that is was cheaper than the Chromebook. I guess it's dual. Wasn't an iSeries, it was a dual core at least, with a graphics accelerator. So that would be another way to go, but of course that's that much more weight in your bag, whereas the Pine Book, no weight at all. Now, one thing I will tell you, you go through checkpoint, TSA is going to take, when they x-ray that thing and they see if there's nothing in the box, they're going to take it out and do the rub down and all that stuff, because they don't know what that thing is, and it freaks them out.
Okay, I've never traveled with it, so I had no idea. All right, so I'm firing up my Pine Book now for the first time in probably weeks or more than a month. Where do you have a link where the OSs are that you found that work good? Because I drilled down Pine 64 on resources, and all I can find is Android.
Okay, shouldn't take too long. I think it's in their wiki.
Right, so another good, very nice traveling computer, and I've got one now, is the GPD Pocket 7-inch. Well, they crowdfunded that this year. Where it came with a Windows 10, when it was crowdfunded, it came with the options of Windows 10 pre-installed or Ubuntu. And I got mine a bit later on because not having money to get that plus something else at the time. But anyway, now they only sell the Windows 10 version, but you can put a bunch on there yourself, be that the GPD version or the community version. So Ubuntu 16.04 was GPD. Community provide things like this, Ubuntu 17.04, and there's even a Mint version, and there was a, I think it's an app-based distro for it, Manduro, whatever it's called. And that's one of the devices I have on my to-do list to set up properly with Linux when I do that.
Oh, that sounds good.
That's my Xperia X, which I'm on now. I've got Sailfish OS that. I'm removing Android off this phone and putting Sailfish OS on there. That's why I bought this phone in the first place. And I'm setting up a laptop as well, which I got back recently with a new motherboard. But unfortunately, as I was hoping to put Linux on it last night, starting with the Ubuntu
16.5150 https://forum.pine64.org/forum-display.php fid equals
starting with the Ubuntu 16.04, it did not install from two USB sticks, got grub, and then it goes black screen. I don't know why that is. That's a bit strange to me. I mean, I disable secure boot, and I'm thinking, was there something else I had to disable in the BIOS as well or something? Because I can't remember quite. It's been a while. But yeah, you wouldn't put Linux on your laptops. You'll be stuck with Windows because of silly reasons. And that one can actually run Linux. So
Fiddy, which OS did you go with? Debian, Ubuntu, Armbian, Arch, OpenSUSE?
Pretty sure I went with a version of Debian.
So the Pine 64, I kind of forgot about that or overlooked it, or came back in mind or whatever. But I think last thing I read about really was that at least a few months back, I believe, or something like that, they were going to crowdfund it. So I guess it's been actually sold now properly. So is it just ready for general sale now? Just go and buy one off the website or something?
Well, they were doing batch builds. I don't know if they're still doing that, how they're doing that. So if you order it, there's going to be a batch built, once they fulfill the requirement for the batch, have payments, and then they build the batch and then deliver it. So it's not like you're going to get it overnight or anything like that. That may have changed. So don't let me talk authoritative on that, because I don't know if things have changed. That's when I got it, that's how it was.
Yeah, special batch, I guess, because there's not that much demand for these. Not that many people know about them, I suppose. But also, isn't it really very similar to sort of having a Raspberry Pi, but in a laptop? Obviously, it's not a Raspberry Pi, but...
I'll tell you what, the keyboard... Fiddy, chime in and let me know where I am. But I think the biggest downside on it is the trackpad. The trackpad has a precision that's so a bore. It's just horrible. Keyboard, I think, is fine. I think the display is fine. For $100, for the keyboard display alone, I would say you got really superior quality just for that cost. Forget about the battery or the board or anything, the CPU on it. if the trackpad was better, like if they gave you a $20 option to upgrade the trackpad, I'd be all into it.
Yeah, the trackpad is dismal, and the even more disappointing are the speakers. They're just...
Oh, right.
I've said this, you know, they're not fit for purpose to hear anything at all. Doesn't matter what operating system it is. You go in the operating system, and you raise the speaker volume all the way. And if there's a separate sound manager, you go in there and raise it all the way. And on Linux, you go in the ALSA manager, raise it all the way, and you still... You know, if you want to play a YouTube video, you're going to be sitting there straining to hear it.
That's,
I mean, it's
right.
Not like you could do YouTube and send an email at the same time. Mm-mm. Or something, or read, because you it's so low, you got to totally concentrate to hear it. So
those little boards look like they're pretty good, though. I think a gigabit Ethernet looks like.
Oh yeah, the Pine boards as products are really good. I don't have any Doors talked them up, so I trust Door on that. They must be good.
Pine 64 Raspberry Pis, all this kind of stuff. I've also got a pocket chip, and then the two chips as well. But the pocket chip is quite a impressive Debian based device. To be honest, I haven't done that much with mine, to be fair, but yeah, it's Debian ARM, so it can run with some of the ROM programs, ROM interface. It was very cheap. It was crowdfunded. It was like the $99 PC, basically, a computer, and I think you can just buy them now, really, but that can run most programs as long as they've been ported to ARM under Debian, so yeah, I could do more with mine, really. Setting the wireless up is a little bit complicated, I read, or the Bluetooth, but again, that can be done as well.
Yeah, I have to admit that I kind of borked mine up and have not found... There's no really easy factory reset on it. It can be done, but I think it's connected to a Windows PC and do this and do that and do the other thing, which I haven't done yet. But what I did, I was listening to Lyle on the URandom podcast, and he had set his up as network diagnostic, and he reminded me that it's actually running Debian. It's got this unique interface. It's only got links to its four or five programs that it thinks you need to run, plus a terminal, said, well, yeah, you can just go to the terminal, do apt-get LXDE, run LXDE on it. So I did that, got LXDE, found out, yeah, you install LXDE, but it doesn't bring over any of the already installed applications or any of the applications you would think would be with LXDE. So I've got no command interpreter, and I've got no installer, no app manager. So there's, you know, all I've got is LXD desktop and nothing else. Now, Lyle recently did mention SSHing into his, and I completely forgot about. I'm pretty sure SSH server is enabled, so I'll have to try that, see if I can get in a back way and install software.
Yeah, I mean, the GPT Pocket, the thing is, I did read somewhere that actually, yeah, okay, it's all about the pre-installed interface and the few programs it comes with, and then like you just said, you've got the terminal, install Firefox and various other things and launch it from the terminal, of course. But I did read somewhere that you can also actually add your own icons onto the GPT Pocket for other programs that you installed. And also, because I don't listen to that many of these podcasts and so on, I'm just wondering who Lyle is. Look, is that coming from what I just said?
Yeah, can you repeat that last part?
And also, because I don't listen to that many of these podcasts and so on, I'm wondering who Lyle is.
Well, it's urandom.info, I believe. I looked it up real quick. It's Pokey and Taj and Lyle, who his screen name is X1101. You probably wouldn't have heard him. Except on the HBR book review podcast.
No, I haven't heard of him then. Obviously, I know who Pokey is, or sort of. He doesn't on these things.
Yeah, it's urandom-podcast-info.
Okay, so it's another podcaster, right?
Yeah, it's not necessarily a tech or a Linux-centric podcast the way that, you know, Tilt would be or whatever. It's, you know, it's three Linux guys sitting around talking about life, essentially, what stuff they've done. So some of it's tech, some of it's popular media, talking about movies, music, whatever. So it's just like, you know, and any of us sat down at a conference at a table and we're just talking, but not talking about Linux.
Right, yeah. What did you say it was called again?
It's urandom, like the Linux command, urandom-podcast.info. And I'm putting it into the chat.
5150.
Urandom, I might have had, or maybe not, but also we've got a nice bot on here, but yeah, we need a woman on here anyway. It's not going to happen there, is it? It might do.
Yeah, I went in and turned down the volume on my notifications. I don't know why it's still coming through.
It's Mumble, I guess, but I'm on Plumble today instead. First time, the free version of the app for Android. And then the actual Mumble, which I did actually install first, even though I kind of looked at that and thought, is that
really... Flying Rick, be right back.
Is that really Mumble? Doesn't quite Mumble LTD, whatever it said, and that's something else. But so maybe that's why it's called Plumble on Android instead, because a name issue with the app. I don't know. Or any idea why it's called Plumble on Android otherwise?
Well, it's not from the regular Mumble people, so... And somebody wrote it.
Right, I kind of sort of gathered that as well. But the actual Mumble app that sort of popped up in the Play Store wouldn't even mumble. You know, that was something else. It's like you can do it. You can mumble. You can do some mumbling. And in Plumble 3 is the other one that popped up. I looked at this before, and you sort of hope or have to try and trust these apps that they're not malicious. But there's nothing too bad on. I don't know, you have to trust the App Store with these things, at least with something like...
Quisha, IIRC, Plumble is the free version.
At least, like, with something like Ubuntu Touch, I think the App Store was a lot easier to trust, really. That was one proof of concept. This could have been malware, I think, they got through, but other than that... That's a good point I'm making, actually. There's just too many apps in Android and all these other things. Windows, even these days... iPhone, you have to trust that those apps that you're actually installing are secure or enough so. And the other thing that got me about Android is how every app wants access to all the file permissions. It's improved slightly now, apparently, but I didn't ever like that about Android. But
well, I think I've been using Plumble as my remote app for about 3 years now. Well, when I had that fire, and the only way to get on was with my Android phone. That would have been about 3 years ago, and I wasn't even an early adopter then. Other people had been using Plumble, so yeah. If anybody were to ask me, I'd say that's a fairly trustworthy app. If something was untoward about it, the community would have noticed by now.
Yeah, I guess. But I wonder about next year or whatever when I actually, well, I think I've got another Android phone anyway, but when I got Sailfish on here, what I'm on about, that should be able to run these things as well, because it can run those lots of Android apps as well. So I guess I could use it on there as well. And have you got any more devices, 5150? Because about a year ago, when I last talked to you, which was on this, a whole year's been by. So have you got any other interesting tech devices since then? Surely you do, because you seem to have loads of stuff as well.
Yeah, I don't know about unique, because I've picked up a couple more... maybe three more than last year, Raspberry Pi 3s. I don't think I had any 3s last year, but the reason for that playing around with the, you know, the Home Assistant devices. And yes, I know the whole argument that you're giving the NSA a microphone directly into your house. I acknowledge that. And so this is more experimenting because I really hadn't got around to setting anything up. And then at I have had my mic off sitting here and sort and waiting for it to mature. But you know, Black Friday sale they had at Walmart $25 Google Home Mini, so I grabbed a couple of those at that price because that's cheaper and I can actually build the thing. But have not really. I mean, they're fine. There's a novelty to talk to or whatever, but you know, any real utility, I have not found the sweet spot for that yet.
Dude, I don't know if you saw the video on YouTube I posted about 2017 wins and fails. Hold on, I do have my outline. Let me grab that.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, my little Google Home, it has some use. I've had the Amazon Dot for a while, and the Google Home just beats the pants off of it for just getting info.
Okay, so here's my bullet points on the Google Home, and I have 50. Have you been keeping up on my YouTube channel, or?
Yeah.
I'm assuming the dead air was a no.
Well, I can't think of anything in particular that off.
So okay, with the Google Home, let me just run through this. The big win for me with Home Automation Assistant and IFT and Google Home is all the lights that I have running on Home Automation Assistant are now voice controlled. The bitch is you got to do the on and the off config in IFT, so that's the only pain. So let's see, where's my Google Home? Okay. I've got the Google Home Mini, and I got it at Best Buy, and I think it was like $29, and they give you a $10 gift card. It's actually a superior speaker. I was shocked because for the Bird, I have a Galaxy S3 next to the Bird, and I usually play talk radio for them, and better audio quality on it. I don't have to F with the UI. I can just tell it to play something for the Bird, and I'm just shocked at the audio quality out of that cheapie. And the Google Home full size, which is, I don't know, 2-3 times the price, is supposed to sound even better. But another big win, because there's three of us in the house, is the shared shopping list. So as you're doing things in the kitchen, you can just say, hey, you know, add this to the list. Hey, G, you know, add, you know, whatever, eggs to the list, that kind of thing. I did mention this already, so music for the Bird, so I could just walk out of the house, or as I'm walking out, I can just say, hey, play this, and boom, it plays something for the Bird. Chromecast control. So what we do a lot of the time is we tell it to play a video of a fireplace. So it turns on the TV, because if you configure your HDMI port for whatever standard, if you have a smart TV, it has it in the menu, and you can configure basically the TV wakes on, you know, like wake on land. Basically, it wakes on, you know, a device playing. Cooking timer, you know, a hands-free cooking timer, just phenomenal. Because when you're, you know, you got your hands deep in whatever and you just don't want to touch anything, like say you're going to use your phone as opposed to some sort of, you know, egg timer type device, that's a big deal. And like I said, with the Home Assistant, so one of the things that I have is my HP LaserJet 5, and it's in my office. So if my wife or daughter want to print, and that inkjet, you know, is, you know, near dead on whatever color, and they just want to print something black and white, all they have to do is talk to Google Home and tell it, you know, LaserJet on, or turn LaserJet on, and they can turn the printer on and off. They don't have to call to me, turn it on, did you turn it on yet? That kind of thing. All they have to do is say it.
I was thinking, what is Google Home? But I think we have a nice little advert for that there. However, the only thing with these voice recognition, so I guess somebody's got to say it, you know, be it this Google Home, I suppose, be it Cortana in Windows, or be it little Siri, whatever Apple's got, you know, all these things apparently can, of course, pick up on the voice data and transmit it back to the companies and then spy on you. So I guess that's the one thing with these things, especially when they're proprietary and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, so that's the short of it. And I'll tell you what, Door-to-Door Geek really set this. He's the one that shed light on me for this point. We're already walking around with a device with two cameras and a microphone on it. So if you're worried about crap, you're already way deep into it. So not having a Google Home or, you know, whatever, you know, hockey puck device in your house that's recording you all the time isn't going to make you any safer, because every other device that's connected to the internet has a microphone on it.
But, well, yeah, that's true as well. All these Android phones and all this stuff.
Anything well, frick your stupid laptop.
Your stupid laptop.
And yeah, the webcam, we just said that meant the laptop. All that stuff can potentially spy on you as well. More so if it's running proprietary software, of course. Which most of these devices are. So,
like a Microsoft Management Engine?
Like a Microsoft Management Engine?
Privacy respecting what LibreM or whatever. You hear about that one, LibreM laptops and the phone. And you can have a laptop that doesn't do as much if you want to use like the whole route of, say, Richard Stallman or something like that, which most people don't, because they want to do certain things that, you know, you have to have use some closed source software for.
Well, don't you think that's the trade-off, is the fact that you may be listened to, you know, if you're worried about it, just shut the things off when you don't want to use them. Or you know, sometimes I think some of us put a little bit too much emphasis on Big Brother listening. The emphasis is knowing Big Brother is listening and adapting your ways of doing things to that.
In 25 years, I haven't said anything that I don't expect everybody to hear all the time, especially email. I have never typed an email message that I have not fully expected a third party to read. So you will never see an email from me saying anything incriminating, stupid, or whatever. Now, hey, there might be n number of audio conversations or phone conversations. Sure, yeah, there probably. But yeah, likewise, even in my home, I will not say something so incredibly stupid that it would get me in trouble. I've often said, you know what, I'm going to hike 20 miles into the woods, leaving my phone behind and all electronics and anything electrical before I talk freely.
Well, heard Bruce Schneier said at a conference I heard a couple years ago at PenguinCon is you could have Congress do a 180, change the authorization for the NSA to listen in on devices and all that. And he says, you know, he says you can't trust, even if there's a law, you can't trust it. If the technology is there for someone to be monitoring you, then you have to proceed as if they were monitoring you.
Agreed. Absolutely.
That's well, yeah, I agree with that, I suppose. But most people don't think about it. They, you know, they do. They'll do silly things around the phone and all the and devices and you know, and just think, oh, the camera's off or whatever, but maybe on. And I've been, what was my last event game? The one event I went to, obviously, is Linux still, but, you know, got like a little OpenSUSE webcam cover given to me on the stand, I think it was. These devices will spy, and they probably do spy, and they might actually spy more than most people actually realize, or potentially. And if they knew, they might think, I better not use an iPhone. Definitely not an iPhone, because that's very closed source or very proprietary. Most people don't know this. So, you know, who's the richest company in the world? Apple is. And for other reasons as well, but, you know, generally speaking, if people knew about certain things, I'm sure Linux would have taken off much more than it has on the normal computers as well. But it hasn't, because people don't know. And not just privacy, but just generally speaking, stability, performance. I mean, there's various reasons why it hasn't gained the desktop market, but it has all the other markets that matter pretty much, Linux in some form or the other.
As far as device toys that I've picked up, I didn't quite get to finish that, but just here the other day, I think we probably saw a couple weeks ago, saw this new Google Cardboard camera thing that was supposed to be able to, that you put a Pi in, and you is able to distinguish between dogs and cats, which I guess maybe if you had a dog door or something. I didn't see much. I thought it was cool. I want to get one to play with. But again, I don't see a whole lot of real world utility to what they've got built into it. But probably the hardware they've got with it, somebody will find a way to do something cool with it. And link in the same article. You know, showed links to get both that and, you know, last year's Google Voice Kit that came out with the Magpie, well, last spring. You know, you could actually buy those now. I've been waiting a long time to see where those would come up retail. I figured retail. Eventually they would. So I looked, and you get them on Micro Center, and I was thinking, well, okay, closest ones in Kansas City, maybe that would make an excuse for a road trip. But I did, just before clicking there, I did a search online, and you can get them on Alibaba. You can get them on the voice kits. I don't think you can't get the camera kit anywhere now. Not even the Micro Center pops up a 404. But the voice kits from last spring, they're pretty available. You can get them off, like I said, Alibaba. You can get them off Amazon. You can get them off eBay. So I bought a kit off Amazon and actually assembled it. I haven't messed with the software yet. It does have a dedicated image that they link to that you download. But what it comes with is a kit. And essentially it has a hat that goes on the I.O. pins, and the hat is manager, well, it has connectors for both microphone and speakers. So it's a dedicated hat for audio. I don't know if it's just normal off-the-shelf Raspberry Pi audio hat, or is it something they made just for this. And then you plug in the speakers, you plug in the button, and you wire in the and you plug in the microphones and speakers. Rather than having a dedicated plug, I was surprised. You know, they were just bare end like a stereo cable, and you put it into a jack and tighten a screw and tighten it down. So it doesn't take too long to put together. Comes with a copy of the Magpie that would have come out originally with it, and since it's just photos. You know, I had to kind of squint at some of those photos, you know, bend what way and do what and slip this into here. But eventually I figured it out. So I've got it physically assembled, have not, you know, you put the image on an SD card and slip the SD card in. I think you have to SSH into it and do this and that and change other things. Nice thing about the Magpie comes with it, also comes with Python programming, so you could actually hook up other switch, you know, do other kinds of projects to physically turn on and off switches, stuff like that, on top of this kit. So it would not be just regulated to being a Google Home. And of course, Rich, you know that on your PodNuts show, the Mini PC show, there's an image out there, or not an image, but there is an application that you can add to Raspbian that is both Google Echo, or I'm sorry, Amazon Echo, yep, and Google Home. So
I'll be right back.
You know, that's probably, you know, that'd probably be the second thing I try on this, since I don't have a version of an Echo to play with. So kind of going that, I could, you know, and again, for what I paid for this, I could not assemble the parts, and I have assembled the parts to build my own home assistant and just not got him put, not got around the thing together. So I could tell you this cardboard cased version is, you know, at least assembly and affordability of the parts a lot easier, and you know everything's going to work together. So I put the I wanted to get to that because I had put the link in the show notes. So if anybody's interested, you can find the Amazon link there.
Right. Okay. So the Google Home, I didn't really know about that, but I guess it's automation, it's Windows, it's Amazon Echo. I haven't really been paying much attention to either, although I was in probably PC World Currys in the UK the other week or whatever, and they had Amazon Echo for sale. But that's just a media player, isn't it, or something like that?
Which one's media player?
I don't know. What's the Amazon Echo? Is that like a media player or something?
It does a lot of the same stuff as the Google Home. You know, apparently it will try to, you can order stuff from there. In fact, that's what a lot of people say it is annoying about it, is it's constantly saying, hey, are you sure you don't want to order this or that off Amazon? let me see. There's some neat stuff that they've been adding to both of them. I know, like with my Google Home, I can tell it to play stuff off of both YouTube and Netflix so far, as far as trying to get it to play the right thing or whatever, you know, and it throws it up on my Chromecast, so I can say, hey Google, play the latest, video from so-and-so and put it on my office.
All right, here's a Google Play Music radio mix based on the latest backup playlist.
I was hoping to do that so it wouldn't hear me.
That's why you gotta say, hey.
Google, shut up! Hey, Google, shut up!
Thanks, 50.
Hey, Google, shut up! Okay, pull the cord out of there. That fixed that. Usually it's pretty good about shutting up when I tell it to shut up.
I've never tried that command.
And the other thing is, you know, you were talking about playing music. Maybe you're subscribed to the Google nope. Music, Rich. Okay, anytime I ask it to play something, it says, sorry, you have to be a Google Home Music subscriber.
I have a free iHeartRadio account, but it does play some Google Music stuff for me also, which I'm kind of surprised at. Yeah, I was waiting for that, but it doesn't do that.
Yeah, mine plays a little bit of it too.
Hey, it still will work with Google Music, but it's a smaller selection.
That makes sense. Because here's the thing, you could be nickeled and dimed to death by all of these, you know, $5 or $10 a month accounts, and unfortunately, I don't have Joel McLaughlin money to blow on that. I got a question for you guys. I'm suffering through this. I got like 3 SanDisk 32 gig micro SD cards that are DOA. And I have no idea when I bought them or the receipts or anything like that. They're guaranteed forever, but I don't have any of that prior documentation. What the frick should I do?
Radio check.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess we don't have any ideas either.
Dead air. So if nobody's talking, should I just spam my site? You know, hey, go to flyingrich.com, sub my videos, like my Google Plus post, because everything's there at flyingrich.com. Should I just do like a 24-hour commercial?
So, Flying Rich, I know you got the Central Pennsylvania area, right?
What's that?
Don't you have ties to the Central Pennsylvania area?
I grew up on Long Island. My dad lived in Hershey for a couple of years.
That's what I meant. You're not in the area, are you?
Nah.
I was going to say, there's a cool show. I was talking to M.R. Jackson a little bit ago in Lebanon in 2 weeks.
Oh, Lebanon, Pennsylvania? Yeah, I know the neighborhood. What's going on there?
It's a small show called Cabin Fever Expo. I'll post it here in a second.
Because, you know, at the Lebanon Convention Center, they've got what I think it's the biggest in the country, model airplane swap meet. And if you want to buy model airplane stuff for next to nothing, that's the place to go.
This is a small engine show, kind of, sort of. I go for, because I'm a machinist, so I go for tools and stuff. But these guys, they make their own cast. They machine the little the bores and the line bore the damn things and make tank shafts and camshafts, valves and lifters and everything. Turn their own spark plugs out of Corian, and then they make these little motors that actually run. It's freaking cool.
That's wild.
Mr. Jackson's with me as well as Bro in previous years.
Okay, so the Central PA, let's see, let me make sure I got the date right before I continue talking. Okay, Saturday, March 10th, 2018. If you're a model airplane, it's been many years since I've been there, so probably drones, quadcopters, if humans can talk, that kind of thing. At the Lebanon Convention Center, Lebanon, PA, and their website is cpaa.us. So
that's the same location the expo's at.
I forget what road that's on. Let's see, where's the address here?
Follow the Cabin Fever in the channel there, and they've got the address.
It's 80 Rocherty Road, R-O-C-H-E-R-T-Y. Sound familiar?
That's it. That's the same place.
Yeah, yeah. That. How much does it cost to get in? And the line is, let's see, admission $8, which if you're looking to spend $100-$200 on stuff, that $8 is well worth it. Next question is it worth, you know, for me it was a 4-hour drive to get out there and back, but so 8-hour round trip. But definitely if you want to get some super deluxe amazing deals. And unfortunately all my model airplane stuff is more than 10 years old. So all the new radios, all that kind of stuff, I just don't have. Which I'm dying to get a quadcopter or a tricopter or that kind of thing. Mount my Gear 360 camera on it. Hey, YouTube had a cool thing. I didn't understand what it was at first. I just saw it this morning for the first time. So if you shoot a 360 video, there's a heat map. So you can watch your video and see where people who watched it were looking at. You know, the most popular spots on your video, which... kind of at first it creeped me out, but then I understood what it was doing. I'm like, how do they know where people are looking? I'm like, oh, 360 video, they're panning around.
Yeah, previous years at the small intro, they had a drag line there. You ever seen one of those?
Drag line? No, what's that?
So drag line's this old open pit mining device. General use, there'll be like 3 or 4 yards worth of volume. And it's a big bucket that's just laying on the ground. You got another machine.
Right. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And they use cables to drop it down in the dirt, and then they use other cables to tilt it the direction and pull it where they need it, and then they pick it up. And anyway, they had a model one with like a 12-foot boom. And what was really interesting about it is somehow they got a hold of the real control unit from within the cab, and they hooked that up to the remote control stuff for this thing. So the real controls are control model drag line on a big pile of dirt. Really cool stuff. Oh, it's really cool. But a couple years back, my uncle introduced me to it years ago, rest his soul. And I first saw the first year I went was in like 2005, I believe it was. And there was a guy there that had taken all the M's out of little Briggs & Stratton 5-horse motors, like on your lawnmower, and he replaced them with his own little valve train assemblies and solenoids and electronics. So he had an infinitely variable, essentially, cam for his Briggs & Stratton motors.
That's way too much work. There was a guy in Long Island, machinist. I don't know if he worked for, you know, the big aircraft manufacturers. But he would make these engines that you needed, you know, a freaking high power magnifying glass to see. You know, like if he dropped a connecting rod, you wouldn't find it.
Nifty. Yeah, there's guys with Siemens and Pulse Jets and, you know, all the stuff.
I've never in person seen a Pulse Jet run. Always wanted to see that. Actually, that's why I got into model aircraft, is I wanted to fly a Pulse Jet and a gas turbine, neither of which I've ever done.
Pulse Jets are loud.
Yeah, as I've heard, each time it fires, it's supposed to be like a shotgun going off.
Have you ever like a Model V1?
Nah, I've none of that stuff. Just, you know, well, I always flew oddball airplanes. I never flew anything too normal, except for the trainer I learned on.
Have you seen those Pulse Jets they use for go-karts and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. Who is it? Colin Furs. I used to like his channel a whole lot before he went YouTube Red.
Yeah, they've got those, like, J-shape and all on pressure differentials within the confined space of the tube.
Yeah, I don't know how. Yeah, the J-type ones, I don't know the mechanics on how those things work, but yeah, you see a lot of that in England.
It's pretty, if I'm thinking correctly, it's pretty similar to a two-stroke motorcycle motors with big exhaust. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Right, yeah, it looks similar. You're right.
Well, it's the same principle. You've got pressure, and the back pressure is what they use for compression in the pulse jet.
So Colin Furze, I'm a little amazed at that guy. I don't know a whole lot about him personally, but apparently he was a plumber, and then he does all of these mad builds. In some of the stuff, how he comes up with it, I'm kind of shocked. And one of the things was he built a pulse jet, and the way he did it is he took did a pattern in sheet stainless steel, welded the edges, and hooked a pressure washer to it. Like, he put a, before he welded it together, he hooked a fitting in for the pressure washer, and then got it its shape by pumping up the pressure washer, you know, basically extruded it, or however you want to say, made it three-dimensional from two-dimensional. And I was like, wow, that's pretty freaking genius, you know?
Yeah, there's one of his videos here, I see, hydroforming with a pressure washer pulse jet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I like watching, I'll tell you, the one channel I really like is Bad Obsession Motorsports. Those guys, the fabrication, the metal fab they do is just amazing. Just absolutely amazing. Uh-oh, we had another time zone go by. Who's in charge of announcing the time zones? All right, I cannot get, let's see, what did I try here? It's an Ubuntu Mate on my Pinebook. I can't get it to boot. The image wrote and verified to the micro SD card, but it's not booting, and I don't know why.
Yeah, sorry, I was going to step away and get lunch, so I put myself on speaker. I had to plug the headphones back in. To both your issues, Rich.
You act as though I have two issues only.
Yeah. I guess the last time zone that we tripped over is much of Russia, Moscow, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and Muscat. If we miss somebody, we've had the same list for years and probably should add two, you know. So, and somebody was asking earlier, I think it was Sebastian, what I had on my Pinebook, and I was looking back for something else on a podcast that I'm on in the show notes, linuxlugcast.com. So here I'm plugging my show. But and it told me that the, you know, I talked about installing the Ubuntu Mate, but on my Pinebook, and it worked. But Rich, the one I grabbed was to install it to the EMC. So make sure there are different images for the EEMC and for an SD card. So. Okay, make sure you got a hold of the right one.
Well, even if it runs off the SD card, I'm cool with that, just to do a test drive.
Well, if you get the one for the EEMC, you still install that to an SD card, and then when it boots up to the SD card, then it asks you to write the image to the EEMC, as I recall.
Wait, are you talking I have to remove the EMMC, or I can boot it off the micro SD and then write it to the EMC?
Yeah, you boot it off the micro SD.
Okay.
Sorry, and the images for the EEMC typically don't run from an SD. I mean, it'll run to do the loader, but it's not like you can choose run it from the EEMC or run it from the SD card. The ones, I mean, they're installer images only, not running images.
So it looks like only a third of the world is 2018 and two-thirds of the world are 2017.
Well, that would make sense because it hasn't hit continental United States yet, and we, you know, being in Kansas, I would be darn near in the middle, I would think, opposite of the equator. Or not the equator, the international dateline.
So or close this is, to it. It's very interesting, the jagged line that the international dateline is and how it excludes some islands and includes others. So there's islands that are further west of other islands that are already 2018 that are not 2018 and will not be for a while.
So well, I'm certain that was all very political.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So the island of Midway is still 2017, but it is west of, let me pick one, Fakasafo. Mm-hmm, yes, exactly. Can't even pronounce it. So Baker Island is another one of those U.S. minor outlying islands that is still 2017, but west of other islands that are already 2018.
Well, what I think was fascinating is there was a time in
Micronesia, I believe. No, not
in late Middle Ages or beginning of the Enlightenment or whatever came after the Middle Ages, that the Protestant and the European and the Catholic countries in Europe were off by about 3 months. Early, well, I don't know that much, several weeks at least.
Oh, that's interesting. I forget what island it is. It's someplace in the Pacific where we have like radar listening towers, but they skipped a day to conform with the international dateline.
And it was essentially the Europeans that, you know, were saying, or not saying, the Protestants looked at it and said, hey, you know, it's pretty warm here in December or something. Something must be off because December's supposed to be winter, looking back at the Romans. And then they figured out leap year, essentially.
Uh-huh.
And that it, you know, had thrown the calendar off by, I don't know if it was a month, 3 months, it was a significant amount of time. And then it took like 60 years for the Catholic countries to agree to make the same adjustment. And no, that is not being critical of some, you know, any, you know, particular religion now. You know, this is something that happened 500 years ago.
Matter of fact.
Exactly. You know, and you can see it on correspondence from the period. If somebody's communicating, you know, from like France to England, they will usually have both dates on there.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, like I said, Rich, I don't know what to tell you. I did not have any trouble getting Ubuntu Mate to run. And I'm still dual booting it in a fashion. I just glued a SD card adapter to the bottom of the case, and I've got an SD with Android on there.
Uh-huh.
You know, so if I did want to boot it in Android, I could boot it in there and do the manipulation to boot off the SD card instead.
Gotcha.
Main reason I do that, if I was traveling, wanted to run like a Hulu app or a Netflix app, and not, of course, not watch it on the system because the speakers again are horrible, you know. But you throw it up on your Chromecast, plug uh-huh. into your hotel TV, you know. Well, you as a road warrior probably do something very similar to that when you're
yeah, I just
when
use
you're
my
away.
Laptop.
And somebody say in the back, I'm sure at home saying, well, why wouldn't you use your phone for that? Not boot your laptop into a different OS where you couldn't use it for anything else. And exactly that. Normally, if everything's working with the phone or whatever, I would be using the phone as media consumption device and the laptop as a work device, or at least check my email or whatever.
Okay, I'm trying to burn Jesse Minimal Pinebook 719. So let's see, next time zone's coming up. We got Saudi Arabia. Is it still more of Russia? What's that little island there off Africa? Is it Tanzania? Madagascar.
Yeah, I've got about 4 hours to go until that. But I was just overhearing 150, I think, basically saying that he uses laptop for work, phone for media consumption. I was just thinking that actually what I do now, but although I don't need to use a laptop most of the time because of who I am, but that's basically it. I have my laptop. I'll use it for, you know, some virtualization for fun or whatever. I'll do emails and stuff. You use Linux, your desktop, Linux stuff on there and that kind of thing. I'm not playing games in Windows. I rarely need Windows for anything. That's a good thing, I think. that I'm getting by just, I can get, you know, these smartphones, you can do quite a lot with them if you're only doing quite basic things, email, listening to music, YouTube videos, all that kind of stuff. And that, I think, is a majority of people these days as well, that they generally will use their phones or tablets for, not for, you know, 70% of what they're doing, or most of the stuff they're doing. And occasionally they'll be on a laptop. Not just me, but everybody. And I do feel that with a laptop, you either have to use it because, you know, you're doing work on it or something, then you kind of have to use it, or that you don't really need a laptop for the most part, because you can do these phones and tablets, and some of these tablets are basically your laptops for the most parts anyway. They've got keyboard, then you've got these devices such as GPT Pocket, even, which I mentioned earlier. And so a standard laptop is, I mean, GPT Pocket is just a mini laptop, 7-inch laptop for the most part. And so a standard laptop, I think, is not out yet, but and either a desktop PC, that's the debate, that the whole desktop PC have disappeared and they're not particularly used anymore, but that in business they obviously are, and for gaming they are, but otherwise, yeah, I suppose desktops are not as popular as they used to be, definitely.
And, you know, in my case, most of my travel, if not all, is recreational, and that would include conferences, you know, so it's not like I take my laptop because I have a project due on Tuesday or something and have to be working on it through the weekend while at the conference. And I know a lot of people, they don't have that luxury. And really, as far as media consumption, you know, if I'm paying to get on a plane, fly to a conference, you know, see the go to the conference, and then I'm I'm spending my evenings in the hotel room watching Netflix, I'm doing something wrong. So that would be in theory. I bring a Chromecast with me. I never really used it except just to plug it in and see that it would work. But yeah, I can see if some, like I said, road warriors like Rich, who, you know, get a job and then they're in a hotel for a week or 2 weeks or whatever. Definitely, that would be you know, something. And yeah, reading emails is one thing. Doing quick responses is one thing. If somebody asks me something on an email that takes me half a page to explain, I would, you know, and pulling in links from the internet or whatever, I'd much rather do that on a laptop. And since I have plenty of laptops, and one of them being a $79 featherweight laptop, I, you know, it's not even have to think about it, just to throw that in the carry-on. Yeah, if my only laptop was $1,100 laptop, and I was doing all my work at home through it too, and that was my only computer, yeah, probably I would leave that at home when traveling.
I agree with that. I mean, well, I guess. I mean, thing is, yeah, which is another point. Let's talk travel. It's a good point. So, okay, I'll talk about myself actually as an example, because I do have Brussels coming up it's about to be January. I'm going to go a bit longer as well, because I'm going to go to some public speaking groups in Brussels as well, because I do it over here. I want to try it out in a different city. I'm going for FOSDEM, the big, free open source developers European meeting, the big great European event for this kind of stuff. And of course, my laptop is definitely staying here. I don't want a 14-inch laptop with me. It's bad enough when you fill up your travel bag with your various t-shirts from these events and other things. And then your personal bag is small anyway. So I will not, that's not coming. No, that's definitely not coming. I will take my GPT Pocket probably, because that is a very nice portable device. I mean, I could take the GPT XD with me to get, for the same reason, it's nice and portable. GPT Win, which if I took those last time, the two other GPT devices with me, very small little mini PCs basically. In the case of GPT Pocket, if it was internet connected, if I had actual let's say, work to do, you know, emails and all this stuff that you were just talking about, then yes, the built-in keyboard, built-on keyboard is a little bit, you can type on it, but it's not amazing. However, it does have USB ports, a normal USB port, so you can put in your own mini keyboard, like I've done with my other GPD devices before. So I would say that that could be used as instead of a laptop for the most part, be that for when traveling, be that for business, or be it for, you know, recreational fun use, or as the word used. And I think, you know, and that's basically it. Now, who wants bulky devices with them anyway? I don't want big bulky devices with me. I want small things if I'm going to travel. So yeah, phones can be okay as well, tablets, depending on what you've got. But I think the standard laptop, I think that's actually unnecessary to bring around when traveling. If you've got devices such as the GPD Pocket, then I think bringing a standard laptop along for traveling is probably unnecessary, to be honest, these days.
Well, I would like to see if somebody would do a project using the Pinebook and building, you know, one of these things like the size of a GPD Pocket that would fit in, you know, save pocket of a pair of cargo pants, which they could easily do if you take the bottom of it off to do anything like I had to do to the bigger EEMC that I bought. It was included but not installed. And if you look in there, there's like two boards, and like I said, they must be electronically compatible with a Pine 64, but they're definitely not the Pine 64 board. And, you know, all of your ports, you know, your Ethernet port and all that stuff is all, you know, it is a remote connection. So, you know, so there's wires going across there, but essentially you have something like a very thin, you know, form factor of a Raspberry Pi, except not, you know, very thin, because it doesn't have Ethernet or USB ports connected to it. And you got a couple of those stacked one on top of the other, and that's it. You've got a battery, you've got the speakers, and you've got the keyboard. And that's why when this thing goes through security at the airport, they're looking at it, and here's this empty box going through. which makes them nervous. You know, what is that really? So, you know,
Well, yeah. So, I mean, yeah. We talked about this earlier, and I remember somebody at my Linux user group, or I believe it was, I went along with my, you know, some of my devices like I do, and I showed them the GPD Pocket briefly, and they were like, oh, you know, if you go and travel with a device like that, they're going to possibly get a bit silly on the security, because it's going to come up in a weird shape on the scanner and things like this. And then, and I think that's basically what you're talking about. And apparently some people have actually traveled in airports with these kind of devices and then been stopped at security because of, you know, well, it might have been. And so I'm a bit like, I mean, last time when I went to Brussels, actually, this year, well, okay, so the world's in 2018 already, I'm in 2017, and just under 4 hours now, personally, but I did go to Brussels this year, back in February, and I did, like I mentioned just now, I did bring my GPD Pocket with me, and I did bring my, not GPD Pocket, the GPD XD, the mini PC, and the GPD Win. And I had to fly to an airport where something had happened that year. So the security was upped. And I like they do, they say to you, take out your phones, take out your tablets, take out your mini, take out all your tech devices. And I was a bit, when I went to Sweden again the previous year, I believe it was, probably previous year in the summer, I remember going through Stansted Airport in London, that's the one we've been through all those many times, being half Swedish as well. But anyway, I remember the woman there saying, like, what's that? Is it laptop? Is it mini PC? Should I take this out? And it was a bit like, no, that was on the Swedish end because I went through Stansted, but left it in my bag, no problem. And then in Sweden, they said like, what? I was a bit like, should I take this device out? And she's like, is it a laptop? Is it a tablet? I was like, no, not really. But then that was all fine. But in Brussels, I went through with it this year on the way back, and I felt like, you know, right, this, yeah, I should probably take it out really. And so I did. And yeah, I went through the scanner fine, no problem. You know, it's just a mini PC. But I did hear the debate that actually quite a few of these devices you may not, well, you don't necessarily need them out like that, but they get you to do it anyway. Or it's more so the bigger devices, like big laptops, those should be out definitely. The smaller devices, possibly not, I think I heard somewhere. But yeah, it's very annoying having to take tech out in the airport for obvious reasons, especially when the baggage disappears for a long good while, like in Stansted Airport, these big airports, and you waiting on the other end for the scanner, the people scanner, you know, waiting for your baggage to come, and you think, where is it? And then all these people around, and you know, you could potentially lose stuff easier there. But yeah.
Yeah, I traveled some with my, was still working, my Remix Ultra tablet. And since it has, you know, it has a detachable keyboard, but you just essentially leave it on there all the time. And so even though it's actually, they say, no, we don't need to see tablets, I always drug it out because they're going to look in there and say, well, isn't that a laptop? And, you know, so rather than argue with them about it, just easier to pull it out where they can see it.
You said when your Remix Ultra tablet was still working, because I'm wondering now what happened there, but mine is still working, although I think some of the casing or something on the back came off slightly, because I took it to Canterbury with me back in August for camp, and some guys were like to me, oh, the back is sort of gone off, so it's probably okay enough, but... there's people I knew, but yeah, I suppose it still works, but maybe it's best not to travel around with too much, because I assume it's okay enough, but it's one of these devices that are probably hard to get fixed actually, if something does happen, because they're so rare for a start, aren't they? And but I guess as long as the battery is okay and all that stuff, then it's mostly okay. But what happened to your Ultra Remix tablet then?
Oh, about 6 months after I got it, and it happened about the first time I traveled with it. I mean, one of the reasons that sold me on the Remix tablet was over anything else was the GPS. So, you know, rather than looking at GPS. Google Maps on my phone, 13-inch display, traveling. And, first time I took it was to Bellingham for Linux Fest Northwest. And Bellingham is one of those places you just can't get there from here, at least not by plane, at least not practically. So the best you can do is fly into Seattle and then drive the last 2 hours with a rental car. So I thought it would help me for that. And you know, wouldn't connect to GPS the whole time I was out there. Connected fine when I got back home. Well, I did. I guess I did take it out for a test drive one time, two or three blocks, and it worked. And then again, for the drive home, it didn't want to work. And also, the Wi-Fi quit working. I thought that was maybe the hotel. Got home. I kept getting this thing where, you know, it worked fine for weeks. Then suddenly the Wi-Fi would quit working, and... not that it wouldn't connect, it would just look like there was no Wi-Fi hardware in there. You would go to it and the whole thing would be grayed out. Like maybe there was a physical disconnect. And if you left it, you know, and it got where it had to be, you know, first it was a couple days, you know, then it got to be like maybe a couple weeks, that if you just left it and then would, you know, boot it back up, you'd get Wi-Fi back. And... I didn't send it in because it was doing great for me, everything I wanted when it worked. And when it worked, I hated to lose it. And then finally got to the point where, you know, You know, remix wasn't selling them or repairing them either. You know, there wasn't anybody to send it back to get it fixed.
I suppose, but Remix OS, my Ultra Tablet, it worked fine. I mean, I didn't update the Remix OS version for quite a long time. I have now, but you know, it still works. It's just that, and with your GPS and all this, you would hope it works. It's just basically Chinese Android hardware, really, but running a slightly customized version of Android. I do think it's a shame that Remix OS got dropped, but then again, Google apparently has something similar now. I can't remember what it was. I read something. It's a shame because it's nice. It's a nice device for the most part, you know. If that's really it, that's the only OS that runs on it, and nothing else, then obviously there's not going to be security updates and stuff, I suppose, and you know, it becomes less secure online. As for if it still works, don't fix it, if it still works or enough, so don't send it off to get fixed or repaired. I've had that. I've been caught out with that issue myself. With a HP laptop because from day one it would overheat at times. In fact, with Windows, there was only Windows on there, it would come up saying that there was an error, there was overheating at times. Not, I put Linux on it. Obviously Linux is more forgiving, I would say, for the hardware faults, although if I'd read the log files, maybe there would have been stuff in there, you know, hidden away. It's not like Windows where it blue screens or whatever. But as I may have mentioned earlier on here, I'm getting that one. I've got that one fixed. I did send it back. I did send it off to Best to Serve to get it fixed because a shop up here near me look at it. I had a guy look at it that I knew as well, my Linux user group. And they weren't that. They can do that much. So I got it sent off to the HP partner company, or I don't know, Best to Serve, whatever that is. And I rang up, and of course it's like, no, you've got to pay for this. And the guy from my Linux user group said, if you tell them that there's consumer rights laws, it should have been working all along, you spent $550 for it, it should have worked for at least up to five years, then maybe you would have got a free fix. But then of course you have to go and find your old chat logs that may or may not exist still, from old emails, thousands of emails and an email account, and you know, that would be a hassle.
Yeah, about time I gave up on.
Wait a second, Zach. I just want to finish it off quickly because my phone got. So I got it sent back off, and of course on the phone, like, no, you got to pay. It's out of warranty, and like you said, it would be, you know. And so I got, so it's like, that's going to be £300 to fix, and then she's like, oh, we can get it down by. Let me check with my manager, and it goes down to £213, which, if you know UK money, is still not the most cheapest thing to be spending on a laptop fix. It's not too bad, but it's, you know, it's a fair bit of money, and I happen to have some money for that at the time, so you know, and so it's like, I got it fixed. It came back with motherboard, and I have an issue putting Ubuntu on it more recently after all the Windows stuff I've been going through. But I do keep its plastic carrier case that they pull it in to send off in and send it back in.
Casper, Michael.
Because that's like a blow up, I suppose it's going to be a temporary laptop carrying thing, really, but it's quite nice how it's sort of done and stuff. So I'm still keeping that, at least for now. But it's annoying when you've got to fix, I didn't want to send it off because I'm using it, and then you've got your data on it, you've got to take your hard disk out and all this, so I got it taken out before I sent it off, but got a new hard disk put in it, but yeah, it should have been working all along from the beginning, more so properly, and you would think or would hope that with something like HP, that actually they're good brand, or so you hope or think, and that there should be some sort of quality or something, but not with this laptop. But it's just brand, isn't it, at the end of the day? Names, brands, it's all similar, really, the hardware in most laptops, I suppose, or enough, so.
Well, the trouble with HP or Dell or Lenovo, they've got to compete with that, with those bottom end ones too. You know, people don't know the difference. Look on there and they, you know, see an L-name brand and then get a laptop for $300 and they go that way. So, you know, HP and Dell and the good ones, they have a range. You know, they have the El Cheapo ones too, so they can compete. And then for the people who recognize a little better quality, they have some more expensive ones.
I think this one was probably mid-range or whatever, £550. You know, it's not too cheap, it's not too expensive, it's somewhere in the middle. But I did also wait for this laptop specifically because when I was looking around 2 years ago for a new laptop, because my Asus EPC X101CH, those are the last Asus EPC they made, or one of the last ones, is a 2011 model. I got it in 2012, but it was a nice laptop. I got a few issues with that as well. Using my instant on chip OS when it got opened up, and that's something else. But anyway, and there's some sort of power issue. But anyway, that's something else. But yeah, I need another laptop really. So I thought, a touchscreen would actually be quite nice, I think, because I've got all these phones and tablets now, and it'd be nice to have a touchscreen, especially with something like GNOME Shell. I mean, when I first got to try GNOME Shell for real, GNOME 3, you know, back a few years back, because there were problems with my old computers getting it to actually work. But then,
Casper, it's a trick to get your fingerprints.
But then a few years ago, I tried out and fozzed them on the OpenSUSE stand, actually had a touchscreen, and that was nice. And I heard about certain people with touchscreen laptops, and you know, I thought it'd be very nice.
Krisha, 2030 TZ.
Touchscreen. So I looked around and Lenovo popped up, and they had a virus issue apparently at the time where a lot of people with Windows laptops had actually been had viruses pre-installed by their other company, puts the pre-installed software on or whatever. But this HP laptop popped up. It was a bit bendable, not 360, but it could bend into sort of tablet shape with a keyboard on top. And I waited for that laptop, and I used an iPad Air in the meantime that I'd got cheap on the way back from Brussels. For a few months whilst I was waiting, and that was okay. But then the UEFI, I was worried about the UEFI stuff as well, for obvious reasons. And luckily, once I figured out how to do UEFI on this laptop, it wasn't too bad to disable.
Casper, Sebastian, can you turn off text-to-speech in Mumble settings? Dankeschön.
And the bot is saying that it's me with text-to-speech on, but I don't think it is.
Casper, it is.
No.
Krisha, yes, it is.
And that's, I thought that was your bot, 5150.
Well, the text-to-speech is funny because it's definitely coming over in a Brit voice as opposed to an American English.
Well, I just put a test message in the Mumble chat and nothing came up, so.
And so did I.
I did it. Text-to-speech was still checked, okay, so I unchecked it.
Wait, who was it? Was it me or you? Because, I don't know, maybe, I don't think it's me, but maybe it is.
Casper, now it's gone.
But I heard it from Casper.
But yeah, we had it. So I thought it was 5150 all along, but if it's me, then it's Plumble to blame.
Casper, it's you.
Yeah, it's been so long since I've unset it.
Yeah, there is a setting in Plumble that you can shut it off.
What, you think it is me for real?
Fitty, on your Pinebook, what UI do you have? I'm loading XFCE right now.
Mate.
Ah, so should I have loaded Mate instead?
Well, I thought you said you did try Ubuntu Mate.
No, I ended up getting a Jesse something. I couldn't get that to boot.
Okay, like I said, it's been 6 months, so something, you know, if they've done an update, they could have changed something. I haven't had mine up and running in a while. I found out at least the, you know, if you leave it set and not plugged in, the battery seems to run down on me.
Yep.
So if you want to use it to be usable, you'd have to have it, like I've got it in, well, I've got two laptops because of that in my IT go bag, that and a regular laptop, because, you know, unless I had the had it plugged in sitting in the bag, it's not going to be that much use to me.
Oh, that's funny. You refer to it as an IT go bag?
I guess, or consult bag or whatever.
Also, yeah.
Actually, I did probably impulse move, because really what I'm using is a big laptop bag right now. Did bring home from the farm store a little bit bigger plastic, toolbox thing with a handle and wheels, so it'll like roll like luggage. So thinking maybe that would be more to impress the customers, you know, that you're rolling your stuff in.
See, that's what I need when I go to the range. No, really, I need a hand truck.
Oh, and it was mentioned at the 30-minute mark, we missed, because we were having a conversation, we missed the latest greetings. So to Iran, Tehran, Rashid, Estefan, and Bandar Abbas, welcome to the new year.
Yeah, welcome to you. But where's the settings if it is me? Oh, I can't see the prime any settings now. But although I don't hear anything at the moment, of course. But text to speak silliness.
I'm always surprised that we never pick up any service members as we come past those areas of the world. However, you know, I'm sure they've been waiting for a party all year and have better things to do.
They may have better things to do, but if you're serving, you might not be allowed to participate in open source things, ventures of any type.
I don't know. Surely I wouldn't think it would be that locked down unless there's just a general thing. You know, don't get on anything where you could be quoted by media or something like that. I mean, as much open source is used by the military now, I can't imagine there's some edict that says, no, you can't be out there supporting that hippie open source stuff.
If it was me, then yes, it looks like it may have actually been, because there was a tick in the settings there. Although a Brit voice, I don't know if that matters or not, because, well, I was just saying, I suppose, but yeah, unless the app detects whatever, but that should be gone, hopefully, now. But I really thought it was 5150 for some reason.
Well, probably was me, too. I had, I hadn't gotten through the configuration of Mumble on this like I had on some of my older stuff. So there was press to talk was still ticked, but I had the volume all the way down. So I figured that would mute it, but I felt press to talk, text to speech. And it's on the main configuration menu right there. I was looking down farther in menus is why I didn't catch it. So it should be gone now.
Yeah, and also I think I hear some fireworks outside the set episode. These people are 3 hours and a bit early, but yeah, some people just can't wait, can they? Maybe that's what it is.
And tell you what, I'm going to be listening, but I really need to go warm up my lunch, so I'm going to do that and be back.
No, Fitty, don't go. Ooh, it's 70 degrees outside right now.
It will be colder out here, 7 degrees C. I believe while it's earlier, raining, and I'm actually going to go outside very briefly, very soon, in this weather, which I know is not the nicest. And if anybody gets lonely, because there's not enough chat, I bet Casper's in here, I'm sure he can get on his guitar again. Well, actually, he used to do that anyway, because it was kind of interesting, what I heard anyway. Also, actually, I was thinking when I said earlier, could you hear my washing machine, my machine? And you said Rage Against Machine, and then you started playing something, and I thought that's not Rage Against Machine, is it? So, in that case, can you play something similar to the actual Rage Against Machine?
No, that would require additional resources. And I got good news. If anyone has listened to the Alien Brothers podcast with Casper and Rudiger will be joining us on the New Year's live show he'll be able to broadcast live from above the Van Allen belt, transmitting through. It's going to be a ball.
When's that going to be?
Standby.
Crap, I'm doing a apt install of XFCE. Sounds takes a frickin' long time.
Not as long as Windows updates. I've just been dealing with that one on laptop.
Yeah.
Especially when you do Windows 8.1 back to Windows 10, because, you know, that ends up being another 2 hours or so at the reboot.
Somehow Bill Gates gets a dollar every time you reboot. I don't know how it works, but otherwise, why would he make it reboot so often?
Yeah, well, it's he's not going to even work for Microsoft anymore. I think, actually, being more serious, the reason it needs all these reboots, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this would agree with me probably, is that basically, you know, technically it is designed not very well at all. So, yeah, you need reboots after this, reboots after that, and yeah. Right, I'll be away for a bit. I'll be back in a bit. All right.
Yeah, I think I was going to go to the kitchen and hunt down some food.
We got dead air. It's a good time. Good time to check in, to greet our friends, terrestrial and or otherwise, here on Hacker Public Radio. As always, we'd like to thank Josh and Anish from an honest host who is nice enough to let us journey on his server. And he's a good host. We talked earlier in the day.
I'll be back in a bit, Casper. So if you've got your friend coming on, I'll be back in a bit.
Rediger is, I asked for an ETA, have not received it yet. So because we've got some dead air and got some time.
If there's some dead air and you're on your own, I think you know what to do.
Oh, think you bloody well know exactly what we're going to do. Peaky Blinder style. Slash your eyes out with some riser blades. Alien Brothers podcast with Casper and Rediger. That's what we do. We just started very relatively recently on the interwebs. So you are absolutely forgiven. Yes, and I will give you a link to some good stuff here. All right. Hacker Public. If only one could type. And this is a reminder to everyone out there, please type slowly. You do not want to type the wrong thing. If you type the wrong thing, as we were discussing earlier, we were very happy to hear that our commander-in-chief has a big red button and it brings him a Coke. And we're very glad that our commander-in-chief has a red button that brings him a Coke rather than another red button that does something else. Without further ado, let me give you a link first to probably the introductory podcast. Here is our second one, not our best one. Type slowly. Yeah. All right. Let's see what we can get here. Let's see. Search. Let's see if we can find any other aliens. There we go. That's the introduction one. This was a much better one. As I was describing earlier to Klaatu and to the others, to Ken, who is not the moderator. He is not the leader. So he says. Oh, okay. Ringing the bells. Ding, ding, dong. Good, good. That's what we like to hear. Hack Public Radio. Bring it to you live. All right. Okay, let's do some good. Let's do some good stuff. Self-hosted. Well, that's, you know, Casper and Rediger, the Alien Brothers, we are going to have to consider opening up a hosted site of our own on Anonymous Host because of our talk or our transmissions with Josh. We believe that on your blue marble terrestrial plane that An honest host is the best host, perhaps the host with the most. So let's see what we can do here. Thoughts, and here we go. All right. You don't eat your own feedback. All right. Excuse me. Here we go. That's what I was looking for. Alien Brothers will come through. Yes, we were discussing BinRev earlier when the podcast kicked off. It was me and Ken, and Pirate was here at the start, and then Klaatu joined shortly afterwards as his terrestrial time zone had been reached. They launched things from the tip of the whatever it's called, and wherever he was. I hope somebody can continue to take notes. Be very gracious of them. And if Casper can bring us aboard, we're going to be crossing on over to 20 more Baghdad. We're crossing the Middle East, coming up in about 6 minutes here on Hacker Public Radio. Middle East. Aliens hear that that is a troubled part of the world. And in that, along those lines, we would like to transmit a song for parts known and unknown. I'm going to mute myself real quick, make sure that the tunes are tuned. Standby. All right, ready to go. Oh yeah, oh yeah. All right, let's do it. Without further ado, 5 minutes to Baghdad. Could be bombs dropping. There are bombs dropping all the time. Here's to the state of the Middle East. For underneath your borders, there's soil and it's there. And Halliburton wants to build some pipelines over there. And beneath your mountains where you like to live. Whoa, Halliburton would like to give you a pipeline and hide 1,000 different crimes. The calendar is lying when it reads the present time. Oh, here's to the land that we've torn out the heart of, Baghdad. Find yourself another country to be part of. And here's to the Middle East. We drop bombs, not the least. Say, folks over there, they just don't understand. And they tremble in their shadows at the thunder of the clan. The sweating of their souls can't wash the blood off their hands. They smile and shrug their shoulders as the murder of a man. Whoa, here's to the Middle East that we are tearing out the heart of. Baghdad, please find yourself another planet to be part of. And here's to the schools of Baghdad. Where they're leashing all the children, they don't have to care and all the rudiments of hatred and presence everywhere, and every single classroom is a factory of despair. And there's nobody learning such a foreign word as fair. Oh, here's to the lands that we've torn out the heart of Baghdad. Find yourself another country or planet to be part of. And here's to the judges on secret courts of known and unknown regions of despair. Parts unknown on your blue marble down there, who wear the robe of honor as they crawl in the court. They're guarding all the bastions of their phony legal fort. Oh, justice is a stranger when the prisoners report. When the black man stands accused, trial is always short. Oh, here's to the land we've torn out the heart of Baghdad. Find yourself another planet to be part of. And here's to the governments of Baghdad. In their swamp of bureaucracy, there's always a bogging down. And criminals are posing as the mayors of the towns. And they hope that no one sees the sights as no one hears the sounds. And the speeches of the governor are ravings of a clown. Whoa! And here's to the land that we have bombed the hell out of. Mississippi, find yourself a Baghdad, another planet to be part of. And the Alien Brothers will welcome you to our galaxy when you're ready. We know you're ready. Is anybody still out there?
Yeah, Casper, Kenap here. I'm still sitting around. Good stuff, man. It was really good.
I was just having a woot. All right, okay, all right. Yeah, everybody needs a break. They got to do some stuff. They got to do some things, some divs, some nulls, some, but no spans, no divs, as Ken is eager to say. Just wants to wish everybody on the Hacker Public Radio a very happy new year to all. That's what he saw. The writing was on the wall. And we won't fall. Oh, we won't fall. Oh, we won't fall. Casper just wants to wish everybody on the Hacker Public Radio some good, a happy new year. Hopefully better than the last year, if it was not a good year. Did we see the blimp? I'm not sure. Hopefully today is a good day, as some ice men would say.
That's why we're here. We want our transmissions to be clear. To Hacker Public Radio and Josh, an honest host with the most, will serve us all, serve us all, services. Services are provided for an honest price. No fine print, all up front. That's the best that I can say. 'Cause honesty is the best policy. Unless you got a secret, but if you got a secret, they say you don't. If you don't have anything to hide, you should just keep going live and broadcast into your smart bugs. I mean the smartphones. You gotta pull that insect out of your head. Pull the insect out of your head. That's the first step Neo had to go through when we brought him out of the Matrix. Out of the Matrix of despair. Some would say out of the frying pan and into the fire. But that's how hobbits do it in the Kiwi state of New Zealand. We're crossing over boundaries and timelines, but that's okay. All you need is someone to say it will be a good day for everybody on the HPR podcast. It's gonna last as long as it does. Call you my cuz, 'cause you're here. And I'm so happy that we were able to manifest our physical alien presence, beaming down through the center of the earth, coming back through Antarctica, passing by New Schwabenland, and then coming back out, maybe to Ireland, or Iceland, or I don't know, land. Parts unknown and parts known to all. If anybody wants to stop Casper, please chime on in. His fingers can only wear so thin, wear so thin. 21 TZ, thank you, Kate Wisher, for keeping us on track. Welcome to Gordon for joining. I think I'll give my fingers a rest and hope for the best for the Hacker Public Radio podcast live New Year's Eve, 6th annual. Evening all.
Evening all.
Evening.
I think I need a better shortcut than this. My windows keep coming up. Give me a second.
No worries, mate.
Afternoon. I'm getting paced from the other room.
Does anybody else have instruments that they'd like to play? Digital, analog, by Anna Translog.
Thistleweb.
What's Thistleweb?
Yeah, sorry, that is the artist formerly. That's me, yes. I've just, yeah, that is me. How you guys doing? It's been a while.
Well, it's definitely good to hear you.
It's good to hear everybody. It's the community. It's a community podcast.
I'll need to change my button again. I'm already forgetting it.
All right, we got dead air, Berries. Pick a topic, any topic. We'll do. Or I can just keep going on.
All right, I've got a topic for you. It was common, well, everybody seemed to think it was common knowledge that Apple would slow down their iOS or their various things. It's common to get people to upgrade. This time round, they've done it and they're getting lawsuits and things like that. Is there something different this time to what they normally do, what the kind of open secret has been? Is there something different this time?
I can certainly speak to that. Yes. So, anybody who's familiar with Apple products knows that anytime a new OS would come out, their phones would get slower, the Google searches go up. Why is my phone so slow? And that goes back. We talked a little bit about this back at the beginning of the podcast and it's planned obsolescence. It's Apple being Apple. Why are they using this glue that we cannot unglue to put their products together? I mean, the Chinese kids, you probably shouldn't be inhaling those stuff, you know. So that's a whole different thing. And if Foxconn's going to open up a factory in the States, as was once said, they're going to have to make some bigger nets, because I don't think they're familiar with the American body type. They're going to need to adjust the nets to catch the factory workers. Going dark. All right. So everybody kind of knew that already. Yeah. However, Apple was never forthcoming with this, as is Apple's ways. And the big news was that after numerous people had done their own studies of the CPU readings and their frequencies over time with different batteries, et cetera, they confirmed, yes, your CPU is being throttled. So the CPU is being throttled. And so Apple finally had to cop to that. And their weak, weak excuse for throttling the CPU, or this is arguable, but the excuse they gave was that they had some sort of bug in their batteries or something, that some batteries, if they got to 40% and they tried to use the full power of the CPU, then they would shut down completely. So they were like, you'd rather your phone work at 40% rather than shut down, right? Well, yeah, but I'd also like to maybe have the option, and maybe I'd like to know about that. You know, if you buy a piece of hardware and it says it runs at, you know, 4 gigatron watts, and you're trying to run it 4 gigatron watts, and you're like, hey, why is my new shiny Mi device not operating at 4 gigatron watts? Oh, it's the battery. Okay, well, what's up with that? Can I replace it? Nope, can't replace it. Well, you can, and they'll give that to you for $30 now. So enjoy that.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about this time. It seems to be an open thing that's a common thing that the different companies do. So why this time? I mean, this is now on to iOS 11. Why is it taken until now? Why 2017? Have they finally been caught out with that? Because surely if they'd been doing things like that before, then this wouldn't be the first time that we'd be hearing about it.
Yeah, I think that's a two-part question. It's possible that this is the first time that potentially members of the Hacker Public Radio community have taken the deep dives into the CPU readings. But they've also ramped it up in, I believe it was 10.2 of iOS and 11. And there were bits of code I think they were able to pull. And so they were able to say, oh, no, this is definitely something, an issue. And so that's what forced Apple to cop. to it. And so there's class action lawsuits. There's a lot of stuff going on in the States, as the aliens understand.
Didn't Apple change all their iOS over to 64-bit only this year as well? So I wonder if that's possibly been a contribution to this. Like, they've had to rewrite a lot of stuff, and any of the old 32-bit stuff, if there's libraries there, might need to run at a slower speed or not use the full OS or whatever it is. I wonder if that's part of it.
It's quite possible. These are all possibilities. The Alien Brothers here will try to do some research on the interwebs, get the good juice.
T_16, Happy New Year.
We got bleed through from Zoke Phone. Thank you, Zoke Phone.
Sorry. That was meant to be muted. I didn't realize that wasn't muted.
You're doing a dual cast.
Well, my daughter wants my attention in the other room, so I figured I'd take my phone in there. But it's going to sound horrible, so I logged in on my computer to actually have a decent microphone.
No worries. No judgment here.
Tell you, microphones are overrated.
Microphones?
Microphones, yeah.
Oh, microphones. Yes.
Yeah. Those things you're speaking into. The things that are cunningly disguised as owls.
I think yes. Ratings are overrated lately.
Yes. We were earlier discussing the fall and potential infiltration of Rotten Tomatoes giving huge ratings to the latest Planet of the Apes, which some people thought was, they said, what?
We're wondering. It's true. Many ratings are not set up by anybody but whoever's trying to sell the product.
Yeah, and on that note, we also were talking about IMDb. No offer allows for comments to be posted on any movies. Aliens can only wonder why that would be.
I did read somewhere about the one of the news feeds about the alt-right taking credit for the backlash against The Last Jedi on Rotten Tomatoes.
So what's the alt-right is doing something with potatoes or tomatoes?
No, that's the when The Last Jedi got all its backlash, well, it was getting a lot of backlash, sort of mixed stuff on Rotten Tomatoes and bringing the scores right down. Apparently, there was a news article that said that the alt-right were claiming credit for that. I don't know how. Possibly it's a campaign to go in and vote things down and comment things down. I don't know. So push to talk is if you go into the settings in Mumble, and configure an audio, but you can either go into settings and change one of the shortcuts to a button that you don't use, and that way you press the button, hold the button down when you're talking, as I am, and then you let it go as thus. Push to talk is actually really handy, especially when there's a lot of people on the same channel. On that note, I'm going to go and get a beer. I'll be back in a second.
Am I pushing to talk? No, it's not. No. Numlock. Maybe? Numlock. No. Oh, wait. No, hold on. Got to get out of the text. Get out of the box. Let's try it again.
Hey, Casper. Kevin Wisher just posted a link to a PDF that will tell you how to do it pretty easily.
Thank you. I configured a... Okay, let's try this again here.
You've probably got the
there we key. Go. Now I'm using push to talk.
Yeah, push to talk is actually really handy. I found that out quite early on when I discovered Mumble a long time ago.
I think I have to not use the keypad. There's something wrong with that. Stand by. Casper's going to adjust his galactical keyboard.
So happy New Year's, everybody.
Well, happy New Year to you too.
Why, happy thank New you. Year.
Long time no see, Pokey.
Oh yeah, my new job keeps me hopping. It's not like I could just, you know, like my old job where I could just pop on IRC for most of the day. This one keeps me running most of the time.
So as a sound check, in case I need to turn it down, can anyone hear the music that's on behind me? Or have they been while I've been talking?
I don't hear anything.
No.
Nope.
Nothing. I hope nobody can hear my radio in the background, but have some strange sounds.
I'm going to mute myself and redo my configuration wizard and use push to talk because I did not set that up immediately.
With the push to talk too, if you're older or of like from the hill country like I am, the push to talk is similar to the ham or the CB radio, and it's pretty convenient. I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. More than anything else, it reduces feedback. You know, people feeding back stuff that they're listening to reduces that. But it also helps if people are editing because it makes dead spaces that are very easy to truncate.
But it also makes it easier to try and work out when you've got a chance to speak, because if someone's lips are keeping flashing on and on and on because it's being triggered, their mic is being triggered by something in the background, you don't know when you can speak.
Yeah, that's true. The little lip icon that turns red when someone's keyed up.
You know, the funny thing is on amateur radio, I don't use push to talk. I use my Vox. It's funny that I have to use push to talk here because the Vox just doesn't suit what we're doing.
No, I've tried using Vox before, and a couple other people have tried really hard to use it, and it just doesn't pick up quick enough is the problem with Vox through Mumble. And if you use something external to use Vox, like you probably have a pretty good mic that works for you with your ham radio, you'd have to leave Mumble in constant transmit mode, so that's not going to work either. Kind of defeats the purpose.
It works pretty well here, but I have an external noise gate, which makes doing the software side of it through Mumble a lot easier.
Oh yeah, actually, you're right. That would I wasn't considering hardware noise gates.
But you're special.
Shut up, Bill. Go back to whatever you were doing before.
Special.
Picking on you on IRC. That's what I'm doing. Okay.
Push to talk is enabled. All right. Thank you, everybody.
It's gonna make doing the guitar bit a bit harder, though.
Was thinking about that. Yeah, it's going to make it a little bit harder.
Should we tell them about double click?
Yeah, if you just double click your push to talk, it'll stay open. The mic will stay open until you click it again to shut it off.
10-4.
Oh, 10-4. No.
404.
It's more like it.
What's the 411? Nobody?
I got nothing. Sorry.
I give up.
You know what happens when that happens, right?
Anybody know what error 411 is?
I don't think there is one. Isn't that just the information dial number?
I don't know. Every once in a while, I'll see something other than 404 on a web page.
Yeah, you get like a 500 server error. You get a 302 redirect or something like that.
There might error. Be a 411.
411 error length is required. Yeah, length required.
Ah,
error 418.
That's great.
Damn it, I was going for the whole thing right now. What's half a 911, like calling a cop's kid or something like that? Instead of a 911, a 411, or a pretend cop, I don't know.
I'm a teapot.
I'm a teapot, yeah.
Short,
April Fool's Day.
Ack.
Test, test, can anybody hear me?
Loud and clear.
Don't say anything.
Shh.
Well, I think this year I've seen the funniest bit of the, what do you call it, cartoon animation. You seen?
Echo. Hello. Is anybody up there?
Yeah, that's Zoke's phone's not on. There we go. I saw the Family Guy sort of cutscenes. I found one that was absolutely hysterical. I had to pause the episode. Have you seen the one where Popeye at the doctor's? He's like, ack, ack, ack. That's a speech impediment. You probably had a stroke. honestly, if you check out YouTube, the Family Guy Popeye, who's at the doctor's, it's hysterical. And there was that conversation killer.
No conversation killers. Just
Just songs for murderers, because murderers are just like everyone else. They need songs too. That's right. You heard it here. Heard it here, folks. Oh,
easy for you to say.
One would say.
So has anyone else had a life-changing 2017 then?
Yes.
That's what I like, these open questions, which I never did.
Yeah, I had a life-changing 2017 too.
You got an open answer.
That's the problem with yes-no questions.
Yeah, true. I had two back surgeries this year.
We're sorry to hear that.
Oh no, the back surgeries saved me from a lot of pain. it was the need for the back surgeries that sucked, but the surgeries themselves were great.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah, the back's a nightmare when it's not right. And I've had back issues for years as well, but nothing that serious. But even the minor things in the back, that hits you hard.
Not as serious as disclosure. Full disclosure. Sirius, satellite, the star, crickets.
It's a text joke, Casper.
Well, what that was leading up to is I know that I've not done any of the online stuff for a long time. But I figured I know a lot of people here, and I thought I'd come on every new year and just sort of catch up. And up until now, every year for me has pretty much been the same. 2017, I had something major. I found out over the last few months, I'm on the autistic spectrum. I have Asperger's. So my whole life has basically switched upside down on that. I now know I was doing a lot of shit that I shouldn't have been doing, and you know, still trying to get used to that. But anyway.
So, how many undiagnosed Aspergers there are among the geek crowd?
I was just thinking how many in this room alone.
So, Gordon,
let's say how many are in the room.
Spectrum. It's a wide spectrum.
Well, how many of us are on the spectrum?
Probably everyone.
Yeah, everyone's on the spectrum somewhere.
Yeah, that's the point of the spectrum. They've redefined it over the last 5 to 10 years. I mean, it pretty much is a broad swath of the population.
Gordon, can you go into details on how this discovery became apparent this year?
Right. So I'd been told by different people that at work, things like I don't appreciate the way you're talking to me, or things that I would just misunderstand things or mishear things, or just something wasn't quite right. I wouldn't notice when I was offending someone unless it was a really exaggerated response. So that a lot of these things all clicked at the same time. And back in about August, maybe, I happened to be reading an article on an opinion piece on a guy that what it was like to discover you've got autism in middle age. And I was reading that, and for some reason, the links that it took me, I've no idea what autism was. I'm the kind of person that I'm going to see something, I'm sort of curious, like watching a movie and one of the characters are eating with chopsticks. I'm like, oh, I wonder how you do that. And get chopsticks and get onto YouTube and sit and work out how you do it, just because. And it was during that I thought, I don't even know what autism is. And just the way he was describing things, like, actually, that sounds quite kind of familiar. And I inadvertently went down the path of Asperger's when I was doing some research and came across what looked like two or three like genuine medical sites explaining the common things of Asperger's and of autism and ASD and all that kind of stuff. Did one online test, scored really high. Then did another online test, scored really high a second time. And I'm like, you know what? I think I'm better getting this checked. And the more I looked at the symptoms, the more it was like this sort of veil was lifted. I was like, for all my life, I've had this other person with me that sort of steps forward at various times, and now, for the first time, I can finally see it. And I can see the sort of things that sort of trigger me. And the more I think about things that have happened in the past that have led me down different paths, the more I'm thinking, yeah, it's obvious now in hindsight. Now that's exactly what it was. I didn't know what triggered me, what made it worse. I don't know. I didn't know anything how to make it, how to minimize it. Now I do. Now I'm aware of it. Yeah, so that's been the last sort of 3 or 4 months. I've had 2 psychiatry appointments, and they, at the end of the second one, so I've got my official diagnosis. I knew pretty much back in August, maybe July, maybe August, that it was one of these things where I don't think I have this, I know I have this. I just need to get it officially verified by a professional, and then it goes in my medical record. So, and it's not about, I don't see it as a bad thing, I just see it as a thing. It's just a thing. It's part of who I am, and I've basically learned a lot more about myself this year than I've ever done before. And because of that, actually 2018, I've now got plans for 2018. For the first time in my life, I've got plans for 2018.
I've just come in on this conversation, or just had some of this. So I missed a lot, obviously, as well. But actually, there was a question here, I think. Who has autism, who doesn't? Well, apparently lots of technical people actually have autism, technical people, Linux people, probably a lot of people listening to this. Some people are diagnosed and that's known. Others are not. But it's just one of those things. There's always names for various things. But to confuse the whole situation as well, actually Asperger's autism, it's all just autism now. So and there's a massive spectrum as well. Some people are on it a tiny little bit. Some people are somewhere in the middle. Some people are high function autism, somewhere on the top of, you know.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, when I was researching, I went from knowing nothing about it back in August or July, and when I was looking, there was some people were calling it, were classing it as Asperger's, and there were various different sort of terms, and some people weren't, and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it just feels like a lot of the things that I've not even realised were part of me, I now know that, and I now know what I can do to kind of play to my strengths and all this kind of jazz. And I'll be back in a minute. I'm going to change the music.
Also, with autism, apparently it's mostly men or boys who have it, although there are girls out there, women with it as well, but they will have it in different ways. They may even be able to hide it easier. And so just the statistics are that it's mostly males, but yeah.
I just still maintain you have to be slightly screwed up in the head to want to work with computers.
Maybe, well, a lot of people who do have autism or Asperger's or possibly even ADHD, I guess, they do work with computers.
I must be really messed up because I've been working with computers for 40 years.
Yeah, I'm coming up there. I'm working with officially about 20 years, but messing around when I was, you know, 8. Yeah, that's 30 something years now.
And most people don't really understand computers, and so there's a lot of people who do have I know for a fact that generally speaking, that people who are very technical, for example, people doing some of the most, you know, complicated things, it could be with Linux or open source software, it could be some of the kernel developers, for example, or somebody doing some, you know, really complicated projects, a lot of those people would probably actually go down as having autism. I also know that Richard Stallman, who I'm sure we all know who that is, or generally speaking, does actually have autism. I've read his book, it says so in his book, I've seen his, you know, seen his speeches. But it's not just him. There are various other people out there. I believe that even somebody like Bill Gates, or I can't remember quite, somebody like that also had autism, actually. And, you know, there's various examples you can come up on Google. It's just one of those things.
Yeah. You need a certain mindset for some of this, you know. You've got to be able to detail-oriented. You've got to focus on something, and sometimes even just focus on one thing for several hours. And so you need that sort of mindset. And it's like left and right-handed. No one is like just left-handed, or no one is just right-handed. It's just that there's a sliding scale. And so I'm a lefty. I do pretty much everything left-handed, but there's a few things I do right-handed. But it's not a case of like, you know, you are autistic. You're not. There's a sliding scale. So it's not just you are, you're not, you're a little bit, or you're, it's,
it frustrates me that everyone seems to, we have to put you in your box. We have to label everything, you know?
Yeah.
So we've got it, you're autistic, you're Asperger's, you're left-handed, you're ambidextrous, you're whatever. We need to, why? We're all people, it's sliding scales for everything. It's not yes, you are, no, you're not. It's like, yeah, you're a little bit or a little bit. Yeah, you might be predetermined to or predisposed to do this a bit more, but it's not.
I agree with that. It's autism, ADHD, various other things like this. You know, it's a label, it's a name, it's down to society as well. You got to label it. It's like the society wants to put a name on everything, and it's sort of all the way. And the annoying thing with autism is that, or Asperger's, is that because of what society is like as well in general speaking, it's seen as a bad thing by a lot of people who don't really understand it, because they are seen as being different from the majority of other people, probably more so in the younger ages, actually. Like teenagers and all this, you know, early 20s possibly still, and generally people get a little bit more, not always, but generally speaking, people get a little bit more accepting, I believe, as they get older, of other people who are different to them. Like I said, not always, but generally speaking. And there is society is obsessed with what is normal. You know, it's not just autism and things like this. It could be people who are gay or things like that. And you know, there's various things that society has its kind of obsession with. And if you're not that, then you're the other thing, and then it's seen as being weird possibly, and you know, and so it goes on. And that's a bad thing really, but that's how it is at the moment. But things slowly change, it seems, over time. Things get more accepted. Well, it depends a bit on what country you're in as well, what we're talking about, but generally speaking.
So the reason I mention it in here is the fact that I've known a lot of you guys for quite a while. The last sort of 10 years or so, I've been doing the podcast IRC thing, and then I went dark for a few years. I've had a lot of interactions with a lot of you guys over the years, and I'm just saying that up until now, that's been affecting how I interact with people, but I've not been aware of it until now. That's why I mentioned it in here.
I missed the very beginning of the discussion or whatever, but that's something else, actually. And I don't know if this is what you're saying, quite or trying to say, but actually, this is, I've just thought of something else. People who do have apparently autism or Asperger's or things like this, you know, you'll find the online world a lot easier. That could be podcasting, it could be IRC, but to communicate with people, much more relaxing, much easier than in person. In person could be quite difficult because of various reasons, including It could be the obvious, a common one, that you're lacking eye contact in person if you've got autism. That's a common one that people come up with.
Like an eye contact. Like, where's my fucking webcam? this is what I'm saying. When you've got things like that, you're like, oh yeah, that's me. Oh, and that's me. And I've got some of that. Oh yeah, and I kind of do that as well. I get that it's not. Going back on one of Zoke's points, sorry, I'll derail it a second. I know it's a spectrum. I get the thing of putting a label on it and putting it in a box and whatever. For me, that's not what it's about. For me, it's about, I want some sort of a thing that I can focus as a search term and find out, right, other people in this broad spectrum, other people with this kind of label, what do they do to minimize, to change their working environment? What kind of jobs do they do? What kind of working environments, what kind of home environments, what kind of routines, what kind of things do they do that help them? Because the way that I see this is, under certain stimuli, this other part of me takes over, and I've just not been aware of it until now. Now I'm looking at that and saying, I've got to keep that. As long as I keep my environment reasonably decent and I can cope with it, then I can keep that in the back burner. And I can focus on my strengths, basically, and I can achieve a hell of a lot more than I have been able to up until now.
I think, somebody, I think it was Duke or whoever, he made a point that actually with something like autism, technology, computer science, all this kind of stuff, because it's logical thinking, you have to focus on lots of hours, you have to really focus on one thing, you have a lot of concentration, and so a lot of people who do have autism, Asperger, are going to find these things easier. That's a good point. And then apparently what they generally say is that that people with autism or Asperger's have a special interest. So in the case of males, that's very common actually to be technology, computers. In the case of women or girls, I'm not sure quite, but it'll be something else. Maybe very sucked into the books, the fiction reading, but not just liking books, but to the extreme end, or I'm not sure quite. It's different. Yeah,
so basically another part of this is up until now, the last 2 or 3 years, I've just hardly been online at all. That's all starting to change in the new year. I'm setting up a new website. I'll keep the details to myself at the moment because it's just a bulk standard Drupal install at the moment. Oh, by the way, Drupal 8 is fantastic. I've not played with Drupal since Drupal 6, a good few years ago now. Drupal 8 is fantastic. So I've got my plans for 2018 for the first time in a long time, and I can actually play to my strengths.
Well, is that you're going to come online more? Is that what you're saying?
Oh yeah, that was it. I thought I'd be a bit grilled there. Not so much, because what I've found out is the constant interruptions to a routine don't work well with me. I find that at work, and I'm sort of seeing Twitter like that as well. Any kind of social media is kind of like that, where it's just constant disruptions and I don't get stuff done. So the idea is I'm coming back online to do music stuff. I'm learning app development as well. I've got ideas for a few apps. But most of the social stuff is going to be, it's not going to be on social media. I'm not going to be doing blogs and things like that, because that just, I find that adds kind of pressure to produce something or not something out in X amount of time. And it just I end up being a deer in the headlights when I've got ongoing content. So the idea is going to be a static page with music updated and apps and things like that, but pretty much no social presence, no.
Right. Although I remember Cravens, you were really good at that. But a point I was trying to make as well earlier, and I'll try and make this point again actually, is that, because we're on the subject of autism a lot of people actually who do have autism or Asperger or these kind of things will find, as I was saying, the online world a lot easier to interact in, because you know, you're at home or whatever, you're not really with people in person, so you can be yourself more so online, or find it easier. And then in person it's more difficult. People can see you, the eye contact, all this kind of stuff, body language, what does the body language say? That's something else. Because people with autism, generally speaking, a lot of them find it hard to like read body language, or so they say. And the other thing as well with the whole online world is that, as great as it is, or can be, it can also be a bad thing at times, because, and this happens not just to people with autism or these things, but actually generally speaking, is, and I like what somebody said here earlier on, they said something about mobile phones, about it being like a drug these days, or if it were being like that, it would be a drug, because people are just addicted to the whole social media, online, the mobile phones, and not interacting enough in person because of that probably as well. I mean, people would have had Christmas just now sitting on their phones for the most part, possibly even texting somebody in the same room or nearby instead of chatting to them. That's how bad it can be these days, and that I think is a bad thing. The other thing with online is that I know there are people online who do have autism, and a particular girl that comes to mind from Chicago, who I've come across online a few years back on Freenode, and I know where to find her today. And she is about 26 now, I believe, 26 years old, but she does not really have any friends as such, I believe. And she's not working or any of this, or education or any of that. So she's mostly online, and not just her, there are various other people like that. So they basically chill out on YouTube. That's how they spend their life, or in computer games for the most part. And that's basically what they do. Not that much contact with people in person or on the phone or any of this. And, you know, so that's kind of the bad side of online, or depending on how it's looked at as well. And Gordon, your point about sort of being like a different person, or with autism, Asperger's, I think that's probably correct, generally speaking, a lot of people with these things, because it kind of takes over. It takes over and it affects, and you don't always realize that it's there, doing its thing. Or you do afterwards sometimes, and then it's too late. For example, it could be like trying to chat to girls online or something, and then you're sending the wrong thing on these sites, and I don't know if, you know, if people in general, but, you know, and then you don't realize until afterwards, and then girls think differently anyway usually, and that's just one example, but, you know, various things.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the eye contact, that's something I never even noticed I had an issue with. But yeah, and as soon as I realised, I read it on the list, actually, yeah, I do that a lot. Yeah, I mean, there's just so many different aspects of that. And it's like, the way that I would describe it is, it's like, under certain stimuli, when I'm trying to explain to someone, like I'm at work and I'm trying to explain something to a manager to get some help, and they've got a big line of people to see, so I've got to get all my story out within sort of 30 seconds to explain what it is I need the help with. And if I'm not able to kind of explain that, and they're going off on the wrong track, and I'm trying to correct them, it's like, no, that's not what I'm talking about, I mean this. And it just gets, and because I mishear them or misunderstand them, and I can't communicate right myself, it's just a kind of downward spiral. It's like a plane just sort of spiraling down towards the earth. None I can do about it. And I get more and more angry and more sarcastic and just frustrated. And even remembering things like, oh, I remember such and such happened, and actually it probably didn't happen like that. I was maybe just a bit annoyed at the time, and I picked it up wrong, and I thought it happened a different way. So a very unreliable witness, or being told, like, that I'm being aggressive or whatever, and I'm like, I'm not trying to be aggressive, I'm a pacifist, like why? But it's taken until now to realize that it's almost like, under certain stimuli, this other force kind of steps forward and takes control. So I can remember everything, I'm aware of everything, it's just, it's utterly scrambled. And anything could be the outcome, and that's no good for anyone, not for the people I'm talking to. So at least now I'm aware that under these kind of circumstances, I just need to take a step back and realise that, yeah, this is happening again. Step back, relax, and have another go at it.
The other thing as well, or sort of related, I guess, really, is that, I mean, we're using work as an example. So managers, I assume, is what we're talking about, really. So I was going to say managers and colleagues and things like this. I mean, it doesn't have to be work necessarily. It could be a social group. I'm trying to talk in general, like the whole autism in general as well. So I'm trying to kind of do that. But basically, yeah. So body language, as I'm talking about, eye contact, tones of voice, all this stuff. The way you possibly move around, somebody moves around or doesn't move around in a certain situation, all this stuff. You know, if people do it in a certain way, it's all like, or shaking hands in certain situations, if you shake hands okay or not, greeting somebody with shaking hands, possibly all this kind of stuff that we kind of generally do as humans, or apparently do, or meant to do, or, you know, depending on the situation. If we do it in the correct way, or the so-called apparent correct way, or for the most part, then it's probably just like, yeah, fine, okay, yeah, right. If we do it in a sort of different way, and depending on what's done, how noticeable it is, then we get commented on, possibly, or people notice it and they think, oh, you're being aggressive, or you're being whatever, and it's like, no, I'm not, or they don't understand, why won't you shake my hand? Or I was talking about autism, but we could put OCD in here and things like this. You maybe don't want to shake hands with somebody because you have got obsessive compulsive disorder, and you generally think that they are not as clean or whatever, and that, you know, it doesn't matter. But the point is that people always, that if depending what's done, if they notice that something's different, they think, and especially if they think they are the so-called normal one or any of this, then they're going to be like, oh, you're doing this, or they might even put a name on this and go, oh, you got autism, or you got this, or you got that. And that's a bit annoying, really, but that's also how it is in this society, I suppose. And I hope my point was sort of clear, but we'll see.
Yeah, they're humbly clear, man. What you're saying is right enough, and I've got some of that. But for me, the reason I was mentioning this is I've, up until now, I mean, I'm now 40, I'll be 45 in January, I have never been so awakened as I have a while ago. I've evolved, basically. Over the last 4 or 5 months, I've became a different person. And even coming into 2018 as well, by the end of 2018, I'll have properly evolved. It's taken so long, but that's just for all the kind of interactions I've had with people, where I've been in arguments and whatever. I apologize. This has been part of me, and I've never realized it until now. I now do, and I'm sort of becoming someone else.
You know, Gordon, the last thing you were talking about, how certain interactions with people maybe don't go the way you thought they did, or whatnot, it kind of reminds me of something that I've had to do a lot of lately, or actually not had to, but kind of made a habit of doing. A lot of times I'll think that a conversation has gone wrong, or that maybe I've said something I shouldn't, or someone took it the wrong way. And I found that, just like you said, take a step back. And sometimes it's taking a step back for a little bit. Sometimes it's taking a step back for quite a while. But I'll address it with the person and just say, hey, when we spoke, this is how I thought that went. And I, you know, if it did, I didn't intend that. And I apologize if it was taken that way, but I could see how it would be, because, you know, that's what I thought.
Sorry to interrupt a little bit there, but I think that's a nice point, and that's something else, that because generally speaking, if you've got autism,
I'm going to do the unthinkable here. Normally, part of the autism, and definitely something I have, is I am completely oblivious to social cues and social, like, body language and things like that, and just things that normal people just consider, they just get on with it. And but on that note, that's now midnight in the new time zone. So happy new year to everyone in that new time zone.
Yeah, so I don't have the list of time zones, but that'll be Helsinki in Finland in the new year. That will be Egypt, I believe, all of Egypt now. And like I said, I don't have the actual list. What else is plus two from the UK? Turkey or somewhere, maybe? And there's a few others as well.
Yeah, Kevin Wisher, thanks for pointing that out to us, that it was a midnight time slot. Do you happen to have the list? You know whose New Year it is right now?
There's a link to Etherpad on the Hacker Public website.
Yeah, it's going to be somewhere just inside Europe. We're in the UK. I presume Seb and I are both in the UK. We're at 10 o'clock just now, so a couple of hours ahead of us.
So the list says Cairo, Ankara, Athens, and Bucharest.
Cool. Thanks for that. Klaatu, you're already in tomorrow, aren't you?
Klaatu, you're even here. I do want to. I would like to continue the autism chat a bit longer, though, because we got in something here. But yeah, social cues. That's another thing. Is yeah, you know, if you've got autism, you're gonna, you know, find it, miss things. And Poker was talking about apologizing to when you've upset somebody and this kind of thing.
Hang on a second. Not specifically apologizing. I mean, sometimes it has to be apologized, but more just addressing a situation. Very often I'll address it and the person will say, no, that's not how I took it at all, we're fine, and that's enough to just get it off my conscience. Sometimes, you know, the person may take it the wrong way, and I've tried in the past few years to also be specific with my apologies when I do have to apologize for stuff. You know, I'll try to apologize, because if you have an argument with somebody or misunderstanding, it's always two sides to it. So I try to identify my part of it and apologize for what I got wrong or what I did wrong that made the other person, you know, not feel so good. So I try to be specific about that, and that works better than, you know, the way I used to do it. I'm sorry you're upset. That doesn't really work. It's you know, I'm sorry I said this the wrong way. I didn't realize how it could be taken, you know, when I was framing it the first time. Like, stuff like that. But, you know, it's not always apologizing, just addressing it. I find it useful to address a situation. Sometimes I find it necessary, just to make sure that I'm not on the wrong page with someone. And sometimes it has, you know, been that way that, you know, I came across wrong and I didn't realize it until later that, oh, I could have sounded like a real jerk there. Speak to the person and say, yeah, you were a real jerk. Okay, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. I meant it this other way. And it helps to clear the air. Coworkers,
family members.
I like the idea, the sound of that. Like, yeah. So if there is, let's say, a misunderstanding or something's gone wrong, that could be something in person, of something, you know, an argument or just something in general. It could maybe even be a date you went on with somebody or sort of meet up with somebody and then it went wrong. And now you don't always, with those in particular, of course, you're not always going to get the opportunity to then find out later what went wrong with this girl that or woman. But at times you may get the opportunity, and I really like the idea in general of, like, something's gone wrong here, let's find out what really went wrong with that person. And I think it's a good, it sounds like a nice idea to take the opportunity and find out as much as possible when you can do that. But in reality, obviously, you can't always do it. It wasn't really the point Pokey was making, but yeah.
Make sure, well, you don't apologize for things that you didn't do as well. You don't want to over apologize. There's a beaten dog syndrome you can get into, and you, I'm sorry. No, you did a good job. I'm sorry.
Oh, but you can under apologize, that's for sure. But I think it's always good to over forgive and look at things through other people's eyes, because you'd be surprised how peaceful your life becomes when you don't hold anything against people.
I just want to quote this and then say something. I'm going to quote this bit. Look at things for other people's eyes, and I hope Gordon's still here as well as I say this, because that's something else they do say all the time, that people with autism lack empathy, which is not quite true. It can vary a bit on person, but, you know, it's not true really. But I mean, they say that people with autism lack empathy. It's more like people with autism or these things probably actually see the world differently.
Hello?
And social situations differently to various other people. So
it's not about empathy is sort of, but it's more nuanced than that. I experience the same things as other people. It's just I don't necessarily show it in the same way. So for people looking at me thinking, this is a moment where you should be really sad and I'm just not feeling anything, I still feel it. I just don't show it in the same way as everyone else. And I might show it in strange ways that look outside of the social kind of norm.
Well, yeah, that's basically it. That's it.
Oh God.
Sorry.
I think. What was that?
We can hear you, Ken.
Thanks. Just confirming.
Hey, Ken. Happy New Year.
Hi. Just wanted to come on and apologize to you.
To me?
Yeah, for that crappy thing. Sorry.
No. I told you already. That was no need to apologize. It was perfect. It was a perfect troll.
Everybody loved it. I don't know. Quit apologizing. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Goes back to my point. Don't ever apologize.
Sorry I brought this up.
Sorry.
Yeah, we were just talking about over apologizing, and you're over apologizing now, Ken. It was great.
No, that was actually good. That was a lot of the time. I wouldn't have picked up on that, but I did, and well played, sir.
I want to apologize in advance.
In fact, Ken, I should probably thank you for it, because it even made me take a closer look at my position and maybe even adjust it a little. So, if anything, I should be thanking you for it. It was a good troll, though. No, it was hilarious.
I mean, I am a bit... in emails, it's very difficult to strike the right tone as well. So, and also with this weird thing that you talk to somebody maybe once a year and I see the people on this chat as my friends, so to speak. And yet, you know, if we walked past each other on the street, we wouldn't recognize each other. You know what I mean? But it's this kind of weird internet thing.
I think that's interesting with this stuff as well. Because nowadays we've got IRC, and then we've got podcasting, which you've got your various next names on IRC, and you've got your name on podcast, and then you go to these conferences, and I've been to some, and you start getting people going like, I remember you from Do, or and it's like, what? I don't remember you. Where did I talk to you? Oh, yeah. And it's not just that, because then you have to, real names is one thing, then you've got IRC names, you've got podcast names. But generally speaking, if any of us walk down the street, we're not going to recognize each other or go to any of these conferences unless you know somebody from there already or got to know them.
That's why I just smile and nod at everybody, just in case they're one of you guys.
Well, that's a good rule of thumb. I'm going to do that on the train. Pretend all these people that are annoying me are you guys. I'll be fine.
There's some quote from someone that says, just smile at everyone. They'll be so confused as to what you're smiling at.
It is the exact truth that if you give somebody a smile or don't react when they do something that could be against you, it really messes with them.
They wonder what you're up to.
I have a story that I can tell real quickly, Gordon, to really emphasize that point. A friend of mine came to my house one time, and he had just broken up with his girlfriend, and he was having a real hard time with it, and he wound up getting in trouble with the cops, and he wound up getting arrested over it. And the only question they had for him was, hey, who's that guy whose house you were at when we arrested you, and why is he always waving to us?
Okay.
They weren't used to someone waving to them. I would always wave at the cops as I drove past them. Just, hey, how you doing? Good morning. They had no idea. Who's this guy and why is he always waving?
That's a perfectly normal thing to do, surely.
Avoid at all costs, aliens would suggest you would just avoid, because it seems like no matter what you do, they may shoot.
Kill them with kindness.
Yeah, there is that thing about any interaction with cops, and it doesn't matter what you do, doesn't matter how innocent you are, you always act guilty of at least something.
Doesn't matter how well you crawl towards them under instructions, you may get killed.
The other thing I've noticed is the exact opposite of that. When I'm driving, if someone makes a really bad move in a car, if you ever flip them off, it's almost like they're satisfied, like they're happy that they pissed somebody off. But if you give them a thumbs down, it drives people nuts. They go crazy.
And I do want to take this opportunity to over-apologize, because I'm certain it'll probably be appropriate sometime during the evening.
Apologies in advance, that's the key.
No, guys, you're missing the point here. It's a tradition now, whatever you guys do. It's personas that you're doing.
Sorry about that.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.